greatest pregame show in minor league baseball. It's the Air Show starring Michael, Mark Antonini, Hardy Mark, and Ferris. Let's send it down to first base for today's show.
What's up, Ironbirds fans? Michael, Mark, Cantonini, and Ferris down with you in front of the dugout here at Ripken Stadium as we get set for Game 2 of a six-game series between your Aberdeen Ironbirds and the visiting Bowling Green Hot Rods. Well, Ferris, it's a beautiful night for a ball game. Can't get any better than this. I see you got your hat off there, kind of cool off a little bit. I see what you're doing there. It's been a really warm and hot day here in the Dean. We like that. It's better than cold. So, Ferris, we'll see if the Birds can get back in the win column tonight. They had won three of their previous four before losing yesterday's series opener. They did score seven runs in the series opener, so that's not bad, you know, putting up some runs. But Ferris, we had a great turnout yesterday for Education Day here in Aberdeen, and I know you were having fun with the kids. You didn't scare any kids, did you? They didn't scare you either? Okay, just a little bit. Okay, he's honest. He's honest. See, this is what I like out of my my pregame show co-host. Well, we're going to hear from Party Mark in a little bit. But, Ferris, before we go any further on the air show, I want to give a shout-out to a few of the guys offensively for the Ironbirds because quietly some Ironbirds are putting up some big numbers so far this season. And, Ferris, I know you're a big stats and numbers guy, so we're going to dive into the numbers now right here. Well, a couple of guys with three-hit games for the Ironbirds in the series opener yesterday. Vance Honeycutt with his first career three-hit game. He's swinging the bat well, a double and a couple of singles. And how about Aaron Estrada? Back-to-back three-hit games. He has seven hits over his last three games. He's starting to heat up again. He leads the team in multi-hit games. He also leads the team in three-hit games. So he is swinging the bat as well. Going down the list a little bit, how about Ryan Stafford? He's hit safely in seven of his last eight games. He's been really consistent, and he has eight RBIs in that span as well. And then Jalen Vasquez, the slugging percentage is at 500 over his last 10 games. He has four extra base hits in that span. He continues to swing it well as well. So we got a lot of Ironbirds heating up offensively. The bats are going. 10 runs on Sunday, 7 yesterday. We'll see if they can keep it going. Well, before we wrap things up, Ferris, I think it's time to throw it to our guy, Party Mark. What do you say? All right, Party Mark, take it away.
How are we doing, Ironbirds fans? Thanks, Ferris. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. You guys see all the dogs in the stands that we have today for Wolf Wednesday? Well, there's some dogs on the field today as well, and I think Ferris got that dog in him too. I feel Ironbirds win coming on today, and I'm real excited to have some fun with you guys today. What do we say? And we also have Copa on Saturday, and I'm really excited to get to say, Sinceros Increíble de Aberdeen! That's real fun. Thanks, guys.
That's just a beautiful thing to say. You do it so well, too. I know you're getting into that, Mark, hyping up the crowd as always. Well, Ferris, I think he's right. I think you got that dog in you. Well, we'll see what happens today on Wolf Wednesday. When the furry friends are at the ballpark, it's always a good night here at Ripken Stadium. We'll see if the Ironbirds can get back in the win column. First pitch coming up at 7:05 for my guy Party Mark, Photo Joe on camera, my guy Ferris. I'm Michael Mark Cantonini. Thanks for tuning in, Ironbirds fans. Let's have some fun. And as always, let's fly. It's another beautiful night for a baseball game here in Aberdeen, Maryland, as we get set to play Game 2 of a six-game series between your Aberdeen Ironbirds and the visiting Bowling Green Hot Rods. Hi, everyone. My name is Michael Marcantonini, the voice of the Ironbirds, live from Ripken Stadium here in Aberdeen. Well, the Hot Rods took Game 1 yesterday. It was an 11:05 a.m. start time, Education Day here in Aberdeen, and the Hot Rods, which the team with an offense that was struggling a little bit, pounded out 16 runs on 19 hits. They won it 16-7 over the Ironbirds, and they come into today's game 11-11 overall on the season. On the flip side, the Ironbirds sit at 9-13. Both of these teams around 500. Of course, the Hot Rods at 500. Two evenly matched teams. Will get into the numbers as the game goes on. But before we go any further, I'm excited to introduce another guest in the booth, continuing my guest in the booth series this season in Aberdeen. And I'm really excited to welcome Sam Dykstra from MLB.com onto the airwaves with me tonight. Sam, thanks for joining me here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This is my first time in Aberdeen after so many years of driving by on the highway. It's nice to be here actually at the Diamond.
Yeah, everybody always says when I tell them I'm the Ironbirds broadcaster, oh, is that that stadium on I-95? Is that Ripken Stadium? Is that it? I'm like, yep, that's it. Maybe stop in for a game at some point instead of just driving past. So, Sam, it's great to have you here. I know I just said that you're with MLB.com, but within your role with MLB.com, you do a whole lot, as many people that work in sports, especially baseball, do. So within your role at MLB, you are a reporter for MLB Pipeline, covering prospects throughout the Major League and Minor League circuit, and you also are a co-host of the Show Before the Show podcast. So you do a lot. You travel a little bit, covering prospects, minor league stuff. So just for the folks listening to the broadcast that maybe don't know who you are or maybe have read some of your stuff but don't necessarily know the name to the face and all that, just tell everybody about what you do within your role at MLB.com.
Yeah, so for MLB Pipeline, we rank 900 prospects, 30 for every organization. We do top 30s for each farm system. We do the top 100 overall. I contribute to that. I help do top 30s for 10 of the 30 farm systems, and then I do the top 100 alongside Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, and so many of the beat writers for MLB.com chip in with that coverage as well. You can imagine it's the entire minor leagues we're taking a look at, from the Dominican Summer League all the way up to AAA, and then some of these guys, you know, once they make the major leagues, they're still considered prospects, so we're covering them. You mentioned the Show Before the Show. That's the weekly minor league baseball podcast that I co-host with Tyler Mon and Benjamin Hill. We just celebrated our 500th episode last week, which is crazy to say and think about, but there's minor league baseball gives us something to talk about all year round. We do it beginning of the year all the way to the end. We don't just stop during the season because there's so many logo reveals and changes and front office things and trades and everything that gets us through the offseason, so we can get to moments like this, which is the actual game.
Yeah, it legitimately never stops. There's always something to talk about, which is great for you guys doing the podcast. It's the reason why that you're already at 500 episodes. Well, you were nice enough to welcome me on as a guest on the podcast this offseason, so it was great to hop on and chat with you. I know we dove into all my different stops in minor league baseball and professional baseball, and anybody who calls games or plays baseball and gets into pro ball or works in it in some capacity, we all move around, and that's no different for you. So before MLB.com, I mean, we can go back as far as you want, but tell me about some of the stops that you've had in the baseball and sports industry.
Yeah, so I've been interested in baseball all my life. I mean, I grew up in Western Massachusetts with the Green Monster painted on my wall that my dad did by hand. And I went to school at Boston University. I interned at WEEI.com, which is the radio station, the official website of the radio station that covers Red Sox games day in and day out. Got to be around Fenway Park a lot in that role. And then, you know, I graduated from BU and moved on to try to carve out my own journalism career. And the first one that offered me a job was MILB.com. They said, do you want to move to New York City and cover minor league baseball every night from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m.? And as a 22-year-old kid, I couldn't say yes fast enough. And I've basically been doing that ever since. I started MILB.com. The MILB.com team merged with MLB Pipeline in 2021, and I've switched from writing game stories to doing more analytical prospect reports and talking to scouts and talking to farm directors and talking to everybody across the game. But it's still baseball. It's still minor league baseball, and I love getting to tell the stories of these guys before they reach the show.
Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest parts about minor league baseball. And for me, as a play-by-play broadcaster, getting to tell the stories and show fans and families of these players and just baseball people anywhere, like who these guys are as people and not just as athletes. Like, you know, there's more to them than just the stats on the back of their baseball card or on their baseball reference page and whatnot. So that's a really cool part. I know you guys do a great job of that with the podcast. So shout out to you, Tyler, and Ben for all the work you guys do to cover the minor leagues. And I, although you haven't moved around the country and bounced around to different states as like some of us in the baseball industry, it's cool to see the rise that you've taken throughout the industry and some of the roots that you have within it. Overall, though, do you have a favorite thing that you do within your current role or stuff that you've done with MLB.com in the past?
Ooh, that's a good question. One of the things I really enjoy doing, they're called pitching labs. Mm-hmm. They're working with a specific pitcher and showing us grips and showing us why their arsenal works and how it's developed over time. One of the my favorite ones I've ever done was with Jackson Jobe a few years ago from the Arizona Fall League. And these guys get asked so many questions about how their stuff works and all that. But when you can get into the nitty-gritty with it, that's the stuff they don't normally talk about on camera. So they enjoy doing it. You can see they get a little twinkle in their eye diving into their day jobs. Yeah. And I think they enjoy it, and it comes across in the content as well.
I love it. Well, Sam's going to be with me on air all night, so we'll talk more on the flip side of this national anthem break here at Ripken Stadium in Aberdeen. We are just a couple of minutes away from baseball here in Aberdeen as the Ironbirds and the Hot Rods go at it for the second time in this six-game series. Michael Marcantini and Sam Dykstra from MLB.com with you in the booth tonight. It's going to be a fun broadcast, and the Ironbirds are ready to take flight. They are out on the field, and they are getting started with tonight's game. First, the warm-up tosses for Ironbirds starter right-hander Ty Weatherly. This is the lineup behind him tonight. Leading off in center field, it's Vance Honeycutt batting second, the catcher Ethan Anderson. Aaron Estrada's at third base, he bats third. Jake Cunningham is in left field batting fourth. Ryan Stafford's in the five hole playing right field. Leandro Arias is at shortstop batting sixth. Angel Tejada is the second baseman in the seven hole. Anudis Mordaunt's playing first base batting eighth. And rounding out the lineup batting ninth, it's the designated hitter Jalen Vasquez. So that is the starting nine for the Ironbirds behind Ty Weatherly, the tall right-hander who continues his warm-up pitches. And on the flip side for the Bowling Green Hot Rods, they'll line up like this. Leading off at shortstop, Adrian Santana. Batting second, the designated hitter, Emilian Petre. Matt Korvath, the second baseman, he bats third. Noah Myers, the center fielder, is in the four spot. Hunter Haas is at third base, batting fifth. Ryan Spikes, the left fielder, bats sixth. John Diaz is in right field, batting seventh. Rodellis Martinez, the catcher, hits eighth. And rounding out the lineup, batting ninth, it's the first baseman, Brian Brecker, behind right-hander Gary Gilhill for the Hot Rod. So a pair of righties on the mound tonight. Really nice night for a game here in the Dean. Just some light cloud cover off in the distance. Little bit of a breeze, light blue skies. The sun is out. And, Sam, you really can't ask for a whole lot more for a baseball game this time of year.
Yeah, when you first asked me a few weeks ago which game would I want to come to, and I thought about, well, a game in April. Let's do this nice and early. But maybe not too early in April. And I don't know if we would have envisioned even April 30th, the last day of April, that it would be this nice. But it feels like a mid-June game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, great night here at the Yard. And the Ironbirds are looking to put one in the win column to wrap up the first month of the 2025 season. Ty Weatherly ready to go. 6 feet, 6 inches tall. He's 24 years old in his third pro season. He gets Adrian Santana, the switch-hitting shortstop. First pitch is in there for a strike. And we are underway in the Dean. I've got Sam Dykstra from MLB.com with me for the duration of tonight's game. It's going to be great to talk to Sam about what he does with MLB.com, dive into some prospect content and chatter. That pitch misses outside. It's 1-1. Sam, I know you said this is your first time in Aberdeen. How about some early impressions of the ballpark?
Yeah, no, this is a gorgeous park. I mean, I like the tree backdrop. I'm interested to see how this park is going to play. Is it more hitter-friendly or pitcher-friendly?
Fly ball to left. Cunningham in a couple steps. He's there to make the catch. And Ty Weatherly has the leadoff man Santana down for out number one. Let's set the defense for the Ironbirds. Ethan Anderson is catching with Aaron Estrada at third, Leandro Arias at short, Angel Tejada at second, and Anudis Mordaunt at first. In the outfield, Jake Cunningham in left, Vance Honeycutt in center, and Ryan Stafford in right. One up, one down. Here's Emilian Petre, designated hitter tonight. He was the second baseman yesterday. First pitch, breaking ball in for a strike. The count's 0-1. Well, sometimes, just every once in a while, this ballpark plays as a hitter's park, and that's what it played as yesterday, Sam. The wind was blowing out to left and left center, and I know you were tuned into the broadcast doing some homework for tonight's broadcast, so I appreciate you tuning in. But, yes, six home runs in the game yesterday, but traditionally it is definitely a pitcher's park. We'll see what happens tonight.
Yeah, I thought I was coming to a Mid-Atlantic park. It was playing like a Pacific Coast League one, it felt like.
Ground ball out to short. Arias is there. Shuffles throws to first. And there are two quick outs for Ty Weatherly here in the first. Umpires in tonight's game, it's Michael Cross behind the dish and Gustavo Garza on the bases. Yeah, I mean, what you saw yesterday when you were tuned into the broadcast, I mean, that is not normal. I mean, if Ironbirds fans out there or families of the players that have been here the last couple years, they will tell you right away, this is not a hitter's park. But every once in a while, you see a slugfest.
And I've heard that the roof in left field is plenty sturdy because that was tested yesterday.
Yes, yeah, we see a lot of home runs to left field go off of that clubhouse roof. Hopefully just from one team tonight. So here's Mac Horvath, the former Ironbird. Had a big day at the dish yesterday. Two home runs, seven RBIs, and he did that all in the final two innings of the game. A three-run shot in the eighth, and then a grand slam off Angel Tejada with a position player on the mound in the ninth. 1-1 from Weatherly, that's low and away. Sam, you were telling me earlier before we hopped on the broadcast tonight that you've been to not only a couple minor league parks this year, but you've been to a ballpark in the South Atlantic League. You were up in Brooklyn recently.
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn, so it's very convenient to have a South Atlantic League park just down the F train for me. I've caught the Cyclones earlier. I'll do that a few more times this summer, hopefully on warmer days. It was in the 40s when I was there earlier this summer, if you can think about that. But, yeah, also spent some time in Worcester to catch Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer on their opening day, trying to get around the Northeast here early in the year.
2-2, swing and a miss. Horvath down on strikes, and it's a 1-2-3 first for Ty Weatherly. Well, he is locked in early, and after a quick top half of the first, we'll go to the bottom half. No score after the top half of the first. We'll see if the Birds can get the bats going when we come back on MILB TV and Bally Live. Ty Weatherly set the hot rods down 1-2-3 on 11 pitches in the top of the first, and now the Ironbirds will look to jump on the board first tonight. Vance Honeycutt, Ethan Anderson, and Aaron Estrada, the top three. to face Bowling Green right-hander Gary Gilhill. He's been really good so far this season. We'll dive into the numbers in a little bit. But just 20 years old already in his third pro season. He was drafted in the sixth round out of high school in 2022. First pitch to Honeycutt is in for a strike. It's 0-1. Sam Dykstra from MLB.com, MLB Pipeline, with me on the airwaves tonight. Great to have Sam in the Dean, checking out the birds and the hot rods. 0-1 to Honeycutt. Grounded out to the third baseman, Haas. He throws to first, and Honeycutt is retired. Well, Sam, I wanted to ask you about the interview with Honeycutt that you did earlier today, but I guess we'll have to save that for the next at-bat.
He's the leadoff guy. We'll get plenty more chances to talk Vance Honeycutt tonight.
5-3 on the putout. Here's Ethan Anderson, the switch-hitting catcher. Had the day off yesterday, and he is back in there tonight. He's been one of the more productive Ironbirds this season. First pitch, foul tipped into the glove of the catcher, Martinez, 0-1. Well, Sam, you said it during the pregame show that you are in charge of writing the top 30 list, the write-ups, for 10 of the 30 big league teams. And one of the teams that you do the top 30s for are the Rays. And so you've got a lot of information on players in the Rays organization, some guys here in Bowling Green. So and that's one of the reasons why you picked a game this series, is so you could call games for a team that you know a little bit about.
Yeah, that is definitely a reason why I picked Bowling Green tonight. I do want to give credit where it's due. The preseason reports that we have on the Rays were written by Rays beat writer Adam Berry with my input and on how the order goes and some grades and stuff like that. But once the season starts, I'm the guy who does the additions and the midseason update in August.
Anderson slaps one to the left side. That's into the outfield for a base hit. So he continues to hit. That brings up Aaron Estrada. No score, bottom one. Birds looking to jump on the board first tonight against Gary Gilhill. In four starts this season, Gilhill has a 1.71 ERA, 21 innings of work, 15 strikeouts, just three walks. He's held opponents to a 2.08 batting average and a 5.59 OPS. First pitch to the switch hitter, Estrada, fouls it back, and the count is 0-1. Well, Sam, Gilhill is one of the guys on that Rays top 30. He's slotted as number 12 on the top 30 for the Rays right now. What do you know about this guy?
Yeah, he had a breakout 2024 season. He's somebody who played a little around with his arm slot, raised it a little bit. That seemed to work for him. He's got an above-average fastball, above-average slider, and above-average changeup. There might not be a 60-grade pitch, a plus pitch is what we call it, on his docket quite yet. And he hasn't really missed bats despite that really hot start, 15 strikeouts and 21 innings pitched. But he's gotten a lot of ground balls. He's going right after batters so far to begin the year, picking up right where he left off in 2024.
Ball in the dirt. Anderson down to second without a throw. Martinez did a nice job keeping that in front. But Anderson, as soon as that ball was in the dirt, he took off for second, and he gets into scoring position with one out. That'll go down as a wild pitch on Gilhill. Yeah, impressive that he's at high A at just 20 years old. He dominated the Carolina League last year as a 19-year-old. He's one of the best in the league all season. Now up in high A. 1-2, high chopper out to short. Santana has it, throws to first. And there are two gone here in the first. Let's set the defense for the Hot Rods. Rodellis Martinez is catching with Hunter Haas at third. Adrian Santana at short. Mac Horvath is at second. And Brian Brecker is the first baseman. In the outfield, Ryan Spikes in left. Noah Myers in center. And John Diaz in right. Anderson at third for the Birds with two outs. Here's Jake Cunningham. Pitch misses low and away. Well, I didn't get a chance to mention it on the pregame show. We just kind of ran out of time before the national anthem. But Sam and I got to know each other during the 2024 Arizona Fall League season, during the last baseball offseason. And, Sam, any chance I get to talk about the Fall League, I'm going to do it. So I'm glad you're here, because we're going to get to talk about the AFL.
Yeah, when you say it happened in the off season, what off season?
Right.
That's for us, is just a continuation of the season.
The other season.
for six weeks in the desert. But I it's one of my favorite things, is getting to see basically a minor league all-star game every night across the Valley of the Sun in the Phoenix municipal area. I highly recommend it if anybody is able to go, or if you live in Arizona. Go check it out, because you're going to see a superstar almost every night.
Yeah. Cunningham walks on four pitches. He's down to first. So runners at first and third for the Ironbirds. That brings up Ryan Stafford with two down as the Birds look to get on the board first tonight. We're scoreless here in inning number one. That's a great point about the Fall League, and Jake Cunningham, who just walked, was out in the AFL this past year. But it legitimately is a minor league all-star game every night. Top prospects through and through those rosters. And, of course, not only are the regular season games out there essentially all-star games. Stafford chops one to second. Horvath is there. Flipped to second, and the inning is over. But they do a Fall-Stars game later in the AFL season, and we'll get into that. Clearly, Ryan Stafford didn't want us to continue the convo. But the inning is over. The Birds leave a couple. No runs on a hit and no errors. We are scoreless after one in the Dean. We'll head to the top of the second next on MILB-TV and Bally Live. We move to the top of the second inning here in Aberdeen, Maryland. Michael Mark Cantonini and Sam Dykstra with you on the call for tonight's game. It's the Birds and the Rods in Game 2 of 6. The Hot Rods took the series opener in a slugfest 16-7 yesterday. It was a day game early start time yesterday, 11:05 Eastern. But today we're back to the regularly scheduled programming, 7:05 first pitch tonight, as we usually have for the night games here in the Dean. Well, Sam, a pretty quick first inning for both pitchers. Ty Weatherly threw just 11 pitches, picked up a strikeout to end a 1-2-3 first. Now he's got Noah Myers, the center fielder. But what did you like? Again, it's only 11 pitches, but what did you like from Ty in the first?
I mean, it's got to be that efficiency, right? Yeah. Somebody who entered the game with an ERA above 10, he really needed a zero up on the board. Go right after, guys. Make them beat you and get through the inning as efficiently as you can, especially after that game yesterday that you were talking about. So many pitchers for Aberdeen that they need to use a position player in the ninth. They could use a strong start from Ty Weatherly here.
Yeah, the Birds used five actual pitchers, and then Angel Tejada, an infielder, outfielder, super utility guy for the Birds, pitched the ninth. It's never good when you see a position player pitching, but Weatherly looking to give the Birds some length here tonight. Counts 2-1 on Myers, with Hunter Haas and Ryan Spikes to follow. 2-1. That missed just barely. Well, Weatherly has five different pitches to work with. He has a four-seam fastball and a cutter for the hard stuff. And then the off-speed curveball sweeper change. Plenty to work with, and he's coming off his best outing of the season so far, looking to stay hot. Tall right-hander delivers. 3-1 is in there. And, Sam, you mentioned the ERA over 10 to start. A little deceiving early on this year. Four games, one of them starts. Or one of them a start. Entering play, 12 and a third innings of work, 15 strikeouts, just six walks. But some other numbers looking good despite the high ERA early on. 3-2 pitch, that's inside ball four. Sam, let me run these numbers by you right here. The strikeout rate is at just about 25%, 24.6%. So it's pretty solid, striking out one out of every four batters he faces. And the walk rate is in the single digits, 9.8%.
Yeah, those are the peripherals you would prefer for a pitcher, especially somebody who you're going to give starts to like Weatherly. When I was diving into his pitch-by-pitch data, you mentioned how deep his arsenal can be. One thing that stood out to me, his slider, that sweeper you were talking about, gets 40% chase rate. Guys are swinging at it when it's out of the zone. Noah Myers there did not do that. Credit to him, and he's somebody who leads all of high A and OBP. So he's not going to be the guy that's going to chase it, but maybe we'll see more guys expand the zone against that slider.
Big hole on the right side for Hunter Haas, the right-handed hitting third baseman. Didn't play yesterday. Takes a fastball in for a strike. Count is 1-1. No score, top two here in the Dean. Ty Weatherly in his last outing, which was his first start of the season. It came on April 24th at Wilmington. 4 1/3 innings of shutout baseball, gave up just two hits. Move over to first, runner back. He also struck out six, walked just one, threw 70 pitches, 42 strikes. So a great sign across the board there. And the fact that he went 70 pitches, went deeper after three relief appearances to start the year. Taking his time. Here's the 1-1 pitch. Swing and a miss. 1-2. Well, Sam, I'm glad you brought up the swing and miss and the chase rate there for Weatherly, because numbers like that, statistics that tell you a little bit more of the story, they kind of show how a guy's trending and what we might see long-term instead of just the small sample size.
Yeah, we're in an interesting time of year, right? This is the last day of April. These guys have been playing for a month now as Weatherly gets a strikeout here for the first out of the inning, going up and in against Haas. But we're kind of exiting small sample territory, yeah, to the point where now the numbers can actually tell a story. And sometimes that story is that you struggled early. Okay, how are you going to adjust now? Or maybe you got off to a hot start. How are guys going to adjust to you?
So he just picked up another strikeout. Here's Ryan Spikes. There's a swing and a miss there. And although it wasn't the sweeper, pitch diving down and away from a hitter, he did get a chase on that swing and miss from Haas. He went up the ladder, swung at a pitch out of the zone. And that's a great sign right there that he's inducing these chases. Move over to first again. Really keeping a close watch on Myers over there.
And that swing from Haas almost looked defensive, right? Like maybe he was sitting low and away, and the pitch kept coming further and further up and in, and he was just trying to foul it off, couldn't do it.
Weatherly really taking his time with a man on base. 0-1, fouled away, and he continues to get ahead of hitters. That's something that we've seen so far today. Last season with Loe Delmarva, Weatherly had a 2.02 ERA, a 2.85 fielding independent pitching, and he struck out almost 35% of the batters that he faced. Well-deserved promotion to high A to start this year. And he's trending in the right direction. Here's the 0-2. Off the end of the bat, shallow right center. Tejada is out, Stafford's in. And Ryan Stafford makes the catch for out number two here in the second. Well, Sam, it's always good to see a pitcher get big outs after walking the leadoff man in an inning, and that's what we've seen.
Yeah, after a walk, it's all about how you respond, right? Are you going to get too far in your head? Are you going to be too worried about that runner at first, which was a concern of mine because he was looking over there a lot. He was throwing over there. Myers seems to be in his head a little bit, but comes back to get Spikes.
Weatherly can get out of it with no damage done. Here's John Diaz. So let me ask you, Sam, with all the work that you do for MLB.com, the top 30 list, diving into data and information about prospects, What are a couple metrics or statistics that you really like? Throw goes down to second, the tag, and the runner is safe. Stolen base for Meyer. So how about a couple stats that you really look into consistently to help see what kind of value or what a player's like?
Yeah, one I always turn to for hitters is WRC+, which is weighted runs created. And that's adjusted to a league-by-league basis. Over there at Fangraphs, and it gives you a good idea of how good a player is compared to the average. It's taking a whole melding pot of statistics and boiling it into one. It's not an end-all be-all by any means, but if somebody has a 170 WRC+, that means they're 70% better than average, then you can start diving in. It's just a good place to start in terms of hitters. And then for pitchers, for me, it's strikeout percentage minus walk percentage.
Okay.
If you are striking out batters and not issuing a lot of walks, again, that's a good place to start. Then we can dive into everything else.
Counts 1-1 on John Diaz, the right fielder. Weatherly keeping an eye on Myers at second. Next pitch, breaking ball, top of the zone. It's 1-2. I like that point that you make about the strikeout percentage minus the walk percentage. So if I'd say within the last few years, I think the big statistic for pitchers, it's gone from like strikeouts per nine and walks per nine to then strikeout percentage and walk percentage to maybe get a little better idea. And you mentioning strikeout percentage minus walk percentage, I think that's also a big telling sign of how well a pitcher's throwing.
Yeah, and I know strikeouts per nine is still popular in some circles, and it can tell a story for sure, but the version of that I always tell is if you strike out three batters in an inning, that's a strikeout per nine of 27, right? Mm-hmm. But if you did that and you face six batters, it's not a perfect inning. Strikeout percentage is going to tell that much better.
Weatherly steps off, looking Myers back to second, really keeping an eye on him out there, making sure he doesn't get to third. No score, top of the second inning, two outs, and Diaz, the right fielder, in the box. Weatherly trying to win the battle here and get the Birds back into the dugout. 2-2. Off the end of the bat into right. Stafford jumps. It's over his head, and it's going all the way to the wall. The Hot Rods take the lead, and Diaz is looking for three. Throw into the infield is way late, and it's a two-out RBI triple for John Diaz. Hot Rods 1, Iron Birds nothing. Well, Stafford came in a little bit, then realized, well, that ball is going over my head. Couldn't snare it on the jump. It got all the way to the wall. And if you get one over an outfielder's head in this ballpark, it's an easy double, probably a triple. And, Sam, that's what we just saw. So the Hot Rods jump on the board first.
Yeah, due credit for John Diaz for tattooing that ball. I mean, yeah, that ball was hit on a rope. But Stafford clearly misjudged it, came up on it, couldn't change his course in time, couldn't jump. He stands at 5'10", didn't quite have it. Maybe if he was 6'1", he gets some leather on it. But Diaz flying out of the gate gets into third easy.
Yeah, he was thinking three for sure out of the box. So the Hot Rods with the early lead for the second straight day. Here's Raudelis Martinez. Left-handed hitting catcher takes high. The count is quickly 2-0. So Myers in to score from second on the two-out triple. Weatherly can limit the damage to just that one run. Myers, the leadoff walk, comes in to score. A little bit of a lefty shift on for Martinez here. Next pitch, just misses. Oh, it caught the outside corner. Late call there from the home plate umpire, Michael Cross. Counts 2-1. A little bit of a breeze tonight. Well, now it's died down, but that flag in right center field was blowing just ever so slightly. 2-1, check swing, appeal. He went around. It's 2-2.
One thing I want to point out on Stafford real quick, he is normally a catcher, right?
Yeah.
He started 8 games at catcher. He's also played first, second, left, and, of course, right, as he's doing tonight. That's probably a teachable moment.
Yeah.
On how to read a ball off the bat from that specific part of the diamond.
Yeah, and you will see, if for people that watch Ironbirds games regularly and have the last few years, they've seen guys move all over the diamond. If you play one position, you're going to play 4 or 5. That's just how it goes in this organization. And oftentimes you see guys playing what some would consider out of position, but Stafford, a catcher who has seen some work in left field throughout his college career, not a lot of action in right. It keeps me on my toes when I fill out my lineup card, my scorebook every night, because I know it's not going to be the same thing every night. Guys in different batting spots, different positions on the diamond.
And one thing I think it's important to point out, too, right, is that playing left is not the same as playing right.
Yeah.
People think, oh, you're just a corner outfielder. It's the same thing. It's a different read off the bat, which clearly is something that Stafford has now learned.
Well, I was talking to Stafford the other day around the batting turtle during BP, and he said the easiest outfield position to play is center, because you don't have to worry about, you know, the corners and the different angles and the way the ball comes off the bat in left versus right. Center, it's you're just in the middle of the outfield patrolling a bigger area, and it's just coming at you straight up.
It may be the easiest to play. It's the most difficult to play well.
Right. That's and I think that's what he was getting at. Like,
sure,
just in general, if you're maybe not an outfielder or don't play that often, it's probably the easiest just in terms of the ball off the bat.
But no, 100%.
Yeah. So now a visit out to the mound from Ironbirds pitching coach Jeremy Heilman. Martinez just walked. So now first and third for the Hot Rods with two down in the second. It's 1-0 Bowling Green on the Diaz RBI triple with two outs. And now Weatherly, after the mound visit, will try to get the inning ender. Brian Brecker, the first baseman, is due up. And Sam, while we have a little bit of time, diving into the prospect lists that you do, I mean, how much time does it take to put together one team's top 30 list based on all the people you have to talk to and all the numbers you got to dive into?
I wish I could isolate it, but it's all part of a piece, right? Like, you're talking to Brewers people while you're talking to Rays people, while you're talking to D-backs people, while you're talking to, you know, Padres people. It's weeks, and it's weeks and months, because you're constantly researching during the season and taking notes. It's an endless process.
First pitch from Weatherly after the mound visit misses up and in to Brecker. It's 1-0. Well, I'm hoping that your time here joining me on the broadcast as my guest color commentator will help in some way for you with the Rays top 30 moving forward. If you ever find yourself dipping into some Orioles top 30 info, you'll have a little extra to go off of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and some of these guys, you never know who's going to end up on a top 100 list, right? Like, we're going to be voting on these guys all the time. We're constantly refreshing our top 100s as guys graduate, or we just do market corrections a couple times a year, or the big midseason update. We could see somebody like Vance Honeycutt join that list down the line. if his hit tool can come around.
1-1, that's in for a strike. Then, of course, you've got the curveball that gets thrown in there. If a guy is in one team's top 30 or on a prospect list in one organization, he gets traded or ends up signing elsewhere, then you got to fit him into another organization and see how that lines up.
As I knew all too well at last year's trade deadline with the Rays system in particular.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. You probably had some sleepless nights. Running on a lot of caffeine probably around that time. 1-2, swing and a miss. Weatherly gets out of it. Brecker down on strikes. Two more strikeouts for Ty Weatherly in the second. He labored a little bit through a lot of pitches, but he allows just one run on one hit and a couple of walks. No errors, and two left on for the Hot Rods. 1-0 Bowling Green after 1.5. We'll head to the bottom of the second after this on the Iron Birds Broadcast Network. We move to the bottom of the second inning here in Aberdeen. Bowling Green 1, Aberdeen nothing. The Ironbirds looking to even up this series at a game apiece. I'm hoping my guest color commentator Sam Dykstra from MLB.com can bring some good vibes tonight. Sam, it was a tough top of the second inning for Ty Weatherly. He threw 29 pitches in that inning, but he only gave up the one run, and the Ironbirds are very much in this game, even though that was a long frame.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it was such a long frame, we'll see what the ripple effects of that are going to be.
Here's a fly ball to deep right center from Leandro Arias. Diaz on his horse. He can't get there. It hits off the base of the wall, and Arias pulls into second with a leadoff double. One pitch, and the Birds have a man in scoring position. Snap throw back to second. Couldn't get him. Well, that'll work. Just one pitch into the inning and get the tying run in scoring position.
Well, we were talking before about Gary Gill-Hill has very much limited the walks in the early going for Bowling Green. So those are the type of pitchers you need to be aggressive on. If you get a pitch you like very early in the count, jump on it. And to Arias' credit, line that out to right center. Touches the wall. He's in for extra base hits, and now the Ironbirds are threatening.
Here's Angel Tejada. Not quite Shohei Ohtani, but you could label him as a two-way guy. We saw him pitch yesterday, and now in the lineup at second base today. Pitch catches the outside corner. Well, position players pitching, it's always fun on some level, Sam. On other levels, you're like, well, it's never a good thing if you see it.
No, it's not really, and especially at these levels where it's about development and you want to see guys get in work and get in good work. And it's especially as we saw yesterday, that can sometimes inflate stats, right? Like the amount of runs that he gave up, they still go into Bowling Green's stats, and you might think like, oh, they're really hot right now. Well, if they scored a bunch of runs off a position player, it tells a false story.
He gave up 5 runs, only 1 earned, though, in that 9th inning. As he lines one to left field, that's down for a base hit in front of Spikes. Arias held at third, Tejada a big turnaround first, throw back to first, not in time, and he just got his hand back in. Well, this Ironbirds team is aggressive on the bases. It's a good thing Tejada got back there. And now a little bit of a rally for the Birds. First and third, no outs. And Anudis Mordan is due up.
Yeah, I'm interested to see just how aggressive Tejada will be. He obviously had thoughts of going to second there, put on the brakes. But somebody who had 30 steals in 2024, and this is something I'm sure we'll be talking about all night, one thing that stands out to me about this O system now is the emphasis on speed.
Yeah.
The guys like Kobe Mayo and Samuel Basayo, the real boppers, are at the upper levels now. The lower levels, it's defined by the really fast guys.
Here's a safety squeeze from Mordan. No play at the plate. Throw goes to first in time for the out. But the Birds tie the game on the sacrifice bunt from Anudis Mordan. How about a little safety squeeze action in the second inning?
This is somebody, again, Gary Gilhill entering this game with an ERA below 2. You want him feeling a little bit of pressure. So if you get a runner on third, yeah, it's a suicide squeeze. Like, that could have ended poorly. But now he got him even more on the ropes in just the second inning. Felt like Aberdeen needed this.
Birds like to play small ball. They like to just put the ball in play and make the defense make a play. And although the Hot Rods executed that well, they got an out. The Birds get a run. And now Jalen Vasquez almost took out a seat in that second row down the first base line with a hard liner.
And Vasquez, again, doing that aggressive approach, right? Immediately jumping on that first pitch, just way too out in front of it.
JV swinging the bat well, and he'll get a chance to hit with the go-ahead run at second base, only one out. It's Tejada at second. And Vasquez takes a strike. The count is quickly 0-2. Well, over his last 10 games, Vasquez is hitting .333 with a .444 on base and a .500 slugging percentage. 4 extra base hits, 5 RBIs in that stretch. And he's walked almost as many times as he struck out, 6 walks, 7 Ks. Always like a 3-4-5 slash line, even if it is a small sample size.
It just feels like the holy ratio, doesn't
yes.
it? Yes. 3-4-5 will get you into Cooperstown, no problem.
Yeah, I talk to my dad about that all the time, the 3-4-5 slash line, man. Pitch misses high and away. Just one of those things, like, if you're a baseball guy, like, it's such an easy thing to appreciate.
Yeah. It's like the 6-4-3 double play. It just feels natural if you've been around the game as much as we have.
Yeah, pitchers with high strikeout rates and low walk rates. I mean, hitters with the 3-4-5 slash.
We don't ask for much.
just that. 1-2, swing and a miss. Vasquez down on a changeup. And there's a big out number 2 for Gil Hill. That's his first strikeout. Tejada still at second. Back to the top for Vance Honeycutt. Well, he swung early last time, but Sam, you sat down with Vance earlier today for an interview for the Show Before the Show podcast, so we'll get to hear that relatively soon.
Yeah, that'll be out this week. We drop episodes on Friday. Vance Honeycutt, obviously tons of interest in him, being a first-round pick out of UNC last year, ultra-athletic player. The big question is, can he make enough contact? After exhibiting some strikeout concerns last year at UNC, you know, can he make the most of that good power, that really good speed? And he could be a plus-plus defender in center field. I know you guys in Aberdeen saw one last year in Enrique Bradfield Jr. Yep. It would be interesting to see if those guys can be paired up in Baltimore at some point on the grass. But he's going to have to hit. And we talked about that, like getting his bat through the zone for a longer period, giving him a chance to make contact and lean into that athleticism.
So he'll hit with 2 down. Quick meeting on the mound between the battery mates Martinez and Gil Hill. The shortstop Santana was in on that. I think that was just so we could get in some more talking points. We didn't do it last inning.
They got our cue.
Yeah. So 1-0 on Vance. Grounded to third his first time up. Next pitch inside, almost clipped him. One thing that I've seen from Vance in games and a lot during BP, extra BP work, is he's done a nice job taking the ball to right center field and hitting it hard doing that.
Yeah, everybody needs a different offensive cue, right? Like, some guys like aiming right at the pitcher.
Drives one to right field here. Diaz is over towards the line. That one's way out of play. I'll tell you, Sam, I thought that one was headed towards the bullpen and right, but I completely lost it.
That would be great if right after you're saying he typically aims at right center, he goes oppo.
I didn't want to interrupt your point for a foul ball.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Continue there.
No, everybody has different defensive cue or offensive cues, what they're looking to do. Some guys like lining it right back at the pitcher. Some guys like going to the gaps. Some guys like hooking it down the line.
Well, Honeycutt at first now. So first and second for Ethan Anderson. Switch hitter grounds one foul up the first baseline. Did I miss a pitch on Honeycutt, or was that catcher's interference?
That must have been catcher's interference.
Yeah, I didn't think we missed a pitch up here.
No.
Yeah, I was distracted because I completely lost that ball in the up in kind of that the whitish part of the cloud cover. And, yeah, that's got to be catcher's interference. Otherwise, he'd still be in the box. Yep, catcher's interference on Martinez. Well, now 2 on for Anderson. We'll see what he can do with the bat. We're tied at 1 here in the second. Pitch misses low and in. Well, this is not Anderson. This is Estrada. The bases are loaded now. I just missed something else. Relying on the game tracker here. I don't know what just happened. Unless that ball clipped him. unless it was another catcher's interference. Here's a dribbler to first. Going to be a tough play, and he's out at first. Estrada just got him, and the Birds leave the bases loaded. Well, a little weird inning there. A leadoff double from Arias. He came in to score on the suicide squeeze or the safety squeeze from Mordan. A couple of catcher's interferences, and the Birds leave them loaded. But we are tied at one after two. We'll head to the top of the third after another break on the Iron Birds Broadcast Network. Top of the third inning here in Aberdeen. We are tied at one. Iron Birds and Hot Rods in game two of six. The Birds just tied the game on the RBI safety squeeze from Anudis Mordan in the second after the Alejandro Arias leadoff double. Sam, really weird inning. We saw two catchers interference calls. So two errors, unfortunately, on Rodelis Martinez. Not going to help his fielding percentage, but that's minor league baseball. Just a lot of weird stuff going on.
Yeah, I can't remember the last game, honestly, that I watched in which there were two straight catcher's interferences. Maybe that happens at the complex league a lot. Usually that's something that's worked out by this level.
Ty Weatherly back to work. He just threw his 41st pitch of the night to the leadoff man, Adrian Santana, who flew out to left his first time up. Santana, Petre, and Horvath. Next pitch in for a strike, and it's 1-1. But the Birds, Sam, you talked about the emphasis on speed and kind of how the drafts the last couple years have trended towards speed and defense. Well, we saw it on display in the second. Ground ball to short. Arias is there. Long throw to first. It's in time to get Santana. But the speed and the small situational baseball on display with that safety squeeze in that second inning.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this for a number of years now with the rules changes that have come to Major League Baseball. They were first, of course, in Minor League Baseball with the disengagement rules and the bigger bases. There's a little bit more emphasis on speed right now. So maybe the Orioles are trying to find, you know, their way into that and take advantage of those rules with some
nice
of their recent
sliding stop by Arias. Throw to first is a little bit late. It gets away, but Tejada is there on the backup. Really nice play just to keep that one on the infield, but really no chance to get the speedy Petre, and he's got an infield knock.
Yeah, nice range going to his left, like you said. That looked like it was aiming straight for center field, and Vance Honeycutt gets it off, just can't quite complete the throw.
So here's Mac Horvath. He'll hit with a man on first and one out. We're tied at one in the third. Horvath entered yesterday's game with one homer. He now has three. His second two-homer game in this ballpark. The first came in his high-A debut in September of 2023. That one was more fun for us here in the Dean. Yesterday's not as much, but good to see Max swinging it well. 1-0 pitch. That one's in for a strike.
I always wonder how prospects treat these games. Is it a revenge game? Because you are playing against guys who used to be your teammates, and they are not the ones who traded you.
Right.
So I don't think he's trying to take anything out on the Ironbirds specifically, but there might be something a little bit sweeter about homering twice against your former org.
1-1, fouled away. It's 1-2. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's not like when a prospect gets traded, they come back to the same ballpark they used to call home. It's not like, you know, they're doing the video tributes like in the big leagues, standing ovation or anything. It's definitely a much different vibe. But a park that he knows well, and he knows how it plays. And obviously any park plays when you're hitting it 50 feet over the fence.
Yeah, not many ballparks would have held the homers he hit yesterday.
1-2, fights it off the hands. Count still 1-2. Horvath struck out swinging to end the first. Ty Weatherly got off to a hot start tonight. A 1-2-3 first on 11 pitches. Ran into trouble in the second, but gave up just the one run. And then the Birds got that run back. A little bit of a shift on for Horvath. 1-2. Gets one way up in the air on the infield. Middle of the diamond, the shortstop Arias is under it. And he puts it away for out number two. Well, Weatherly seems to have settled in, Sam, after that second walk in the second inning to put runners at first and third with two outs. Had thrown a lot of pitches in the inning. He gets the strikeout to end it. And so far, ground out, infield single, pop out here in the third.
Yeah, but this is going to be a tough at-bat against Myers, who's second in all of high A in average, the leader in on-base percentage, third in slugging, and second in OPS in the entire high A level.
Yeah, anytime you're in the top five in all four of those categories for the entire level of high A, I mean, we're talking all 30 high A affiliates, that's impressive. He's got the OPS just under 1,200 this year. Pitch misses outside. It's 1-1.
Noah Myers, kind of an interesting story. He is old for this level at 25, but he was signed after a stint in Evansville in the Frontier League in 2023. So this may have been another case of the Rays finding a diamond in the rough, right? They do a really good job at pro scouting and identifying talents that they can develop.
1-1, flipped down the left field line, out of play, foul. It's 1-2. Well, you mentioned how high all the slash line categories are, the OPS. Well, the on-base percentage, well, part of the reason why he's towards the top in all of high A, three walks yesterday, didn't have any hits in the game, but if you can go hitless and walk three times, it doesn't matter how you get on base as long as you're there.
Yeah.
Counts 1-2, Weatherly looking to get out of the inning. Runner goes, next pitch, fly ball down the left field line, again foul, and we'll do it again. So I know you said you've got 10 different teams for the top 30 lists. You guys split it up. How long have you had that same 10, or does it kind of change year by year?
It hasn't really changed for me. When I started, I was doing 8 of the 10.
Okay.
The Cardinals and the D-backs were not two of my orgs. We had somebody else chipping in on that, and then when they went on to take another job, I rounded it out with all 10. But for the most part, it's been the same group, which is great because it allows you to deepen your sources, really get to know the organizations, and follow these guys for years,
yeah.
Right? I mean, just because you write them up once, you're probably going to be writing them up for 2, 3, 4 years. Even.
Weatherly misses with a breaking ball high and away, so the count is full on Myers. And with two outs in the inning, the runner at first, Petre, will be off on the pitch. If Myers shoots one down a line or finds a gap, that probably scores Petre. We're tied at one here in the third. Weatherly can get out of it, though. He's done a nice job getting to this point with only the one run home. Takes his time. Here's the 3-2. That's high ball four. And that's the third walk issued by Weatherly.
You can see his frustration there because, again, with Myers, you knew it was going to have to be in the zone if he's going to swing at it. He's not going to let you beat him by expanding the zone himself. So at least be close to the black or around it. That wasn't really that much of a competitive pitch. And Myers is happy to take the walk as he's done so many times already here in Aberdeen.
So runners at first and second with two gone in the top of the third. Here is Hunter Haas, who struck out swinging, and Weatherly just balked. And that's because he slipped as he was in his delivery towards the plate. That's a tough one. It's not one where he flinched or anything like that. He was motioning towards the plate and just, I don't know if the cleat got caught or what, but fell off and couldn't deliver the ball to the plate.
Yeah, that looked like he just lost his footing completely.
Yeah.
He was fixing his right cleat there a little bit, so maybe that was the culprit. But again, talk about a frustrating pitch that he threw to Myers that wasn't really that competitive. And then to now deal with this and put two runners into scoring position in a 1-1 game. I like that the catcher came out to meet with him. This is a time to calm down, gather yourself a little bit, because you just need one out to get out of this.
Second and third, a much bigger difference than first and second. But two outs in the inning, Weatherly can get out of it. For as much traffic that has been on the bases tonight, only one run home. Pitch misses up and in. It's 1-0. Could really use a quick out here. Ground ball, pop out. Something to keep the pitch count down and get him back into the dugout. It's Petre at third and Myers at second. Now Weatherly's 1-0. Pitch misses high and away.
He's trying to go with the fastball here. Again, just to make Haas put it in play, get a quick out, but it's got to be closer to the zone than this.
Weatherly's run some deep counts. It hasn't been too much of an issue so far. Trying to work around a walk and a hit here in the frame. There's a strike. It's 2-1.
And that's huge because, obviously, you don't want to be down 3-0 here and dig yourself further into a hole. But now you've given Haas something to think about. You can throw strikes now. It's not just being wild as he's been in these last couple pitches. He is capable of finding the zone. So maybe play off of that.
2-1. That one looked good, but called a ball just a little bit high, and now it's 3-1. First base is open, but you really don't want to put him on load the bases for spikes.
And you just don't want to extend this inning
yeah.
if you're Weatherly. It's not been your best inning at all. You want to get off it as quickly as you can.
Big 3-1 pitch. Here it is. Fly ball to deep left center. Cunningham's back, and it looks like he's under it. He makes the catch, inning over. Well, a nice job by Ty Weatherly to work around second and third, two outs after that balk, and get out of it with a zero in the run column for the Hot Rods. We're still tied at one after 2.5. We'll go to the home third after this on the Ironbirds Broadcast Network. Bottom three here in the Dean. We are tied at one. A run on four hits for the Ironbirds. A run on two hits for the Hot Rods. Ty Weatherly worked out of trouble again in the top of the third. He's up to 61 pitches through three, so the pitch count's a little high. But Sammy's only allowed the one run, and he showed a lot of poise in that third inning.
Yeah, especially on that last pitch. Again, just go right after Haas. Make him put it in play. The yard held it. That's the best way you can escape, especially when you're dealing with command issues like Weatherly was at the tail end of that inning. Now his ERA is down to 8.8.
Here's Jake Cunningham, the four-hole hitter for the Birds. Grounds one foul. Stafford and Arias to follow. And it's been a really impressive outing for Weatherly because maybe he doesn't have his best stuff tonight. He's fighting something. He's walked three. But he's only allowed the one hit, and there's only one run on the board for the Hot Rods. Here's the 0-2 from Gil Hill. High chopper out to short. Santana's got to hurry. Throw to first in time to get Cunningham. A 6-3 putout to start the third.
That is Gary Gil Hill's sixth ground out of the night, and we're just in the bottom of the third. This is a guy who lives on the ground. I think his ground ball rate coming into tonight was around the 54% mark. We talked earlier about he hasn't been getting a ton of swing and miss, and again, only the one strikeout now through 2 1/3. But if you're getting that weak contact, especially with some of these Bowling Green defenders behind him like Adrian Santana, that's going to work too.
So here's Ryan Stafford with the bases empty and one out. Showed bunt but pulled back, and the third baseman Haas raced in. Now Haas backs up. 1-0 outside. It's 2-0. Stafford bounced into a fielder's choice his first time up, trying to get on and put that go-ahead run on base for the Birds. Gil Hill working quick. Stafford shows bunt again, but pulls back. And that one a ball as well, 3-0. Gil Hill has been durable for the Hot Rods so far this season. He's gone 5-plus innings in each of his last 3 outings, including 6 in each of his last 2. Stafford takes a strike. It's 3-1. Doesn't strike out a whole lot of guys, but also doesn't walk many either. His season high in strikeouts is 4. He has just 1 so far tonight. 3-1. That looked outside, but they're going to get Stafford on a swing. The home plate umpire Michael Cross made that call. And now it's full. Well, that's tough. I think you really want the home plate umpire to ask for help there.
That's probably what I would have recommended doing.
Now Stafford's got to see another one. 3-2. Grounded out to short. Tough play. Sliding stop for Santana. Throw to first is wide, and Stafford's safe. They might give him an infield hit there.
I would. That's a tough play for Santana. What, ranging to his left, I really like the slide that he made there on this artificial turf. Then when it came to the throw, he had to rush the throw. You can see him now eating his glove a little bit, a little frustrated with how that throw came out of his arm, giving a thumbs up over to his first baseman. It was on a bounce. Yeah. That's a tough read, but Stafford was flying up the first baseline. It was going to be a close call anyway.
It is a hit for Stafford. And here is Arias, who doubled his first time up. Traffic on the bases in all 3 innings so far for the Ironbirds. 1-0, swing and a miss. Snap throw to first. Stafford gets back. Well, Martinez showing off the arm behind the dish. We'll see if Stafford goes. The Ironbirds, known for making things happen on the base paths. Swing and a miss there. It's 1-2.
That'll kind of be a point of strength versus strength, because Martinez has had his problems tonight with catcher's interference. I get that. But he's got a career caught stealing rate of 34.9%, which is pretty solid. About one out of every 3 attempted base stealers has been thrown out by him in his career.
Tough guy to run on. 1-2. Called strike 3 on the inner half. Arias not so sure about it, and that's out number 2. Stafford remains at first, and that brings up Angel Tejada. The Ironbirds had just a 72% success rate on the bases last week in the 6-game series at Wilmington. And for some teams, that would be pretty solid, swiping 3 out of every 4 bags. But for the Ironbirds, who have consistently had a success rate over 80%, sometimes around 85%, the last couple of years, a little bit off their game. They have not run much the last few days, the end of the Wilmington series, the start of this Bowling Green series. But maybe with 2 outs, they try to get Stafford in scoring position. Well, they caught him leaning there, but he's back safe.
It's interesting how Stafford has played this inning, right? Like, he flashed bunt twice, just trying to get in the head of Gary Gil Hill, who's been pretty efficient so far, and he worked, I think it was a full count by the time he hit that ball to Santana. Just trying to be a pest. And I say that in an extremely positive way,
right,
by the way.
He's that grinder type of player, you know, grinds out at bats, you know, can drop a bunt down, can kind of show that in his game. Tejada fouls one back. It's 1-2. We'll see if Tejada can get some revenge on the Hot Rods for those 2 homers he gave up yesterday. Again, very tough situation for him to get thrown into. Anytime a position player goes on the mound, they're doing a job there. They're saving the pitching staff. Swing and a miss there, and he's down on strikes to end the inning. 3 strikeouts for Gil Hill overall, and he sets the Ironbirds down quietly in the 3rd. No runs on a hit, no errors, 1 left. After 3 in the Dean, we are knotted at 1. We'll head to the top of the 4th after this on MILB TV and Bally Live. We're tied at one as we go to the top of the fourth here in Aberdeen. A run on 5 hits for the Birds, a run on just 2 hits for the Hot Rods. Well, Sam, Ty Weatherly is back out, 61 pitches through 3. He's done a nice job grinding through this outing. And he's looking to give this Ironbirds pitching staff some length, some injuries over the last couple weeks for the pitching staff. They used 5 pitchers yesterday. So the fact that he's worked into the fourth without his best stuff, it's impressive.
Yeah, especially in those around that second inning. If you had told me he was going to make it into the fourth, I think that would have been a positive. So for him to get here is a nice sign. His high on the season for pitches in a start is 70, so he's getting awfully close to that. But this is a time to break into that 75-80 mark just to save that bullpen.
Ryan Spikes, John Diaz, and Raudelis Martinez, 6-7-8 for the Rods. Weatherly continues to work. Here's the 0-1, fouled back, it's 0-2. It's good to see him ahead of the leadoff man Spikes here. And one note on Weatherly, he had walked just 3 batters in his last 10 innings prior to tonight's start. Tonight he's walked 3 through 3. But he's worked around some of those free passes. Only one of those walks has come in to score. Swing and a miss and another strikeout. That'll help the cause. That's his fourth.
Again, being aggressive in the zone, clearly took that time in the dugout to calm down, collect himself, go right after Ryan Spikes and get a quick and efficient first out.
So here is Diaz, who ripped the go-ahead RBI triple in the second. The Birds eventually tied the game at 1, but Diaz momentarily put the Hot Rods on top. He shows bunt this time and fouls it away. I think that's always a good sign for the team in the field when the guy who ripped a line drive RBI triple his last time wants to just drop a bunt down.
I wonder how much of that, too, is we were just talking about Weatherly didn't look comfortable at the end of the last inning, looked more comfortable to start this one. Now Diaz is trying to at least plant the idea of, hey, you're going to have to get off this mound quick if I am going
to
bunt.
Good pitch there to get way ahead 0-2. Diaz way ahead of that pitch as well with the swing. Now Weatherly can really do anything he wants. He can go to any of those 5 pitches that he has. Looking for back-to-back strikeouts. 0-2, low and away. Went with the changeup there.
Similar location. Good job by Diaz laying off that one, learning from that second pitch.
Weatherly looks like he's working at a good pace right now. Getting the baseball and throwing it. 1-2, that's a little bit high. But the fastball, I mean, you hear the pump of Anderson's glove, the pop of the glove. The fastball's got some life here in the fourth inning.
And you were talking earlier about him being 6'6". That means he's basically getting right on top of batters. He can use that length to create some really good extension.
Swing and a miss. 5 strikeouts for Ty Weatherly. How about back-to-back Ks to open the fourth?
I really like there what we saw earlier in that bat. It was fastball and then changeup away, getting the swing and miss, going back to the changeup, getting Diaz to focus on the outside part of the plate, and then gets that. It looked like a slider from up here, down and in, back-footing him. Something he hadn't seen in the at-bat yet. And that's a second strikeout in the inning.
Yeah, really good sequence right there from Weatherly. Here's Martinez, the catcher. First pitch looked pretty good, but called the ball. Left-hander Jared Beck is up in the Birds' bullpen. Birds hoping that they can save him for the fifth and that Weatherly can get through inning number 4. Lefty shift on for Martinez, the third baseman Estrada way off the line. Pitch misses outside, 2-0. The shortstop, Arias, shading up the middle and deep. Tejada straight away at second. Same with Mordan at first, but he's deep as well. Outfielders ever so slightly playing Martinez to go oppo. There's a good fastball from Weatherly. It's 2-1. Well, Weatherly's pumping in the low 90s, even as his pitch count begins to rise. That last one at 91. Goes with the breaking ball there, drops it in for strike 2. And he's just pitching confident right now, Sam. You can tell with how quickly he's working and the way he's going. Fastball, breaking ball, dropping a changeup in there.
Yeah, he'll typically be around 90 to 93, or he has been, according to Synergy, to start the year. So that's where he's comfortable. He's not overthrowing. He's not trying to blow it by guys. Find the strike zone.
2-2, ground ball back to him on the mound. Flips it out of his glove over to first, inning over. A 1-2-3 fourth inning for Ty Weatherly, his second perfect inning of the night, and he is through 4 innings of one-run ball in Aberdeen. We're still tied at 1 going to the bottom of the fourth. Stay locked in with Sam and me on MILB-TV and Bally Live. Bottom four here in Aberdeen. We're still tied at one. Ironbirds and Hot Rods in a good one tonight here in game two of this six-game series. 74 pitches for Ty Weatherly through four. He's probably done. Sam, he's been really good tonight. The fact that he's allowed just the one run in four innings, maybe at times without his best stuff, but a 1-2-3-4th, that was his best inning of the night.
Yeah, and player development, we talk so much about, like, you want to see a guy dominate, right? But you also want to see how he responds to adversity. And again, as we talked about several times in those four innings, Weatherly's command was going in and out. That last inning was probably the best we've seen him all night in terms of that, clearly showing an ability to bounce back, and I'm sure Orioles evaluators are taking note of that and having more confidence in him as a starter moving forward.
Here's Anudis Mordaunt. Tried to check his swing but went too far around. Counts quickly 0-2. Mordaunt brought the Ironbirds run home in the second with a safety squeeze bunt. Vasquez and Honeycutt to follow Mordaunt. It's 8-9-1 for the Birds. Gary Gilhill still out there for the Rods and gets a strikeout there. That's his fourth. Mordaunt fell down as he swung there. And that's three straight strikeouts for Gilhill. He's tied his season high. Fourth time this year he's fanned four. Brings up Jalen Vasquez.
I don't know if Gary Gilhill had heard what we were saying in the booth in terms of him not being a strikeout guy this season, but he's really turned that around here in the middle innings.
Came in averaging about 6.5 strikeouts per nine, and that's not what you consider a strikeout guy. Again, small sample size early on this year, but you figure to call somebody a strikeout guy, it's got to be a little bit over a strikeout per inning.
Yeah.
Vasquez takes another strike quickly, 0-2.
I would say anything above 25% K percentage would get you excited or at least make you, you know, arch an eyebrow about how good of a strikeout player they are. But for Gary Gilhill, again, it's been a lot of weak contact. He's gotten a lot of ground outs, and now he's adding the Ks into the fold as well.
0-2, swing and a miss. Change up there. Four straight strikeouts for Gary Gilhill, and he's got a season-high five. He must have hurt us. No disrespect the way we were saying it, but man, like he is got every pitch working right now. The first of this four in a row was looking, the last three swinging. And it feels like he's 0-2 on everybody.
And it's something he can do. I mean, he struck out 105 in 108 and two-thirds innings last season. And again, that was a breakout year for him with a 3.15 ERA across 22 appearances, 21 of them being starts. So he can get plenty of swing and miss, but if he's getting that weak contact, that can be just as good, especially if it's early in the count.
Here's Vance Honeycutt. We are tied at one in the bottom of the fourth. The Ironbirds looking to take their first lead of the night. Honeycutt hit his first pro homer a couple weeks ago at Jersey Shore. How about a go-ahead solo shot right here? Well, we won't get it here. Grounded back behind second. The second baseman, Horvath, throws to first, and Horvath takes care of his UNC teammate, Honeycutt. And the inning is over. Nice play there by Mack, thrown across his body. Inning over, we are still tied after four in the Dean. Bowling Green 1, Aberdeen 1. We're headed for the fifth after another break on the Ironbirds Broadcast Network.
This summer, we're going from minor league baseball to major fun. Whether you're just stopping by or looking for that Grand Slam getaway, Wyndham rewards everyone. Start earning points on your next qualified by Wyndham hotel stay and redeem them for minor league baseball tickets and experiences all summer long. Not a Wyndham Rewards member? Join for free at WyndhamRewards.com. Restrictions apply. Visit WyndhamRewards.com for more details.
Birds and Rods tied at one, top five. Well, Sam, I said during the last half inning that was probably it for Ty Weatherly after four innings, but he is back out for the fifth. He gets the nine-hole hitter Brian Brecker to start with Santana and Petre at the top to follow. Jared Beck was up and ready in the Birds' bullpen. He is still out there. So whenever they need him, he's good to go. First pitch from Ty misses high and away. But a chance for Weatherly to get Brecker and complete two times through the lineup. You've got a pocket of lefties due up. That might be when Ryan Gaul makes the move. 1-0, that's in for a strike.
Weatherly up to 76 pitches now after that strike, which is a season high for him. His previous season high was 70. So it's not exactly like he's extending the outing very much farther.
Breaking ball sent in the air to right. Stafford is there. He camps under it, makes the catch, and there is one out in the fifth. And right on cue, I was right. If it goes through the lineup twice, he gets the right-handed batter, Brecker. And Ryan Gaul out of the dugout. He's going to bring in the lefty, Jared Beck, with a switch hitter and two lefties due up among the next four hitters for Bowling Green. And because it's just the start of the inning and got to get the conversation points in when we can, we're going to keep it here on the broadcast during the pitching change. That's it for Ty Weatherly. He's going to get a round of applause from the fans. 4 1/3 innings of one-run ball, he was really solid. And the 7-foot lefty, Jared Beck, coming in. But, Sam, we've got some time to talk here. Really quickly, just overall, thoughts on Weatherly's outing.
I mean, this was a really nice outing from him in terms of staying in there, giving himself a shot, giving Aberdeen a shot, especially coming off yesterday in which they used so many pitchers. We're talking about the tough start to the year he got off to. 4 earned runs, 5 earned runs, 5 earned runs. Those were his first three starts. In his last two now, 4 1/3 in each of them, 1 earned run or less. So clearly he's figured something out here as the season has gone along, overcame some command issues, battled back with that fastball, has that slider that can get some chase. Again, if I'm Aberdeen and I'm the Orioles organization, I would consider getting him another start because he hasn't been a starter all year long. Those first three difficult outings were out of the bullpen. Seems to pitch best when he's getting the ball first.
Yeah, he settled in really nicely as the game went on. And while we have some time while Jared Beck warms up, I got to give a shout-out to your guy, Ben Hill, who tweeted me. So I tweeted about the broadcast tonight that you were going to join me on the air. And he said, please convince Sam to do the 9 crab cakes in 9 innings challenge. I think that's a made-up challenge, but normally it's the 9 hot dogs in 9 innings. But we are in Maryland where crab cakes are big, of course. So could do you think theoretically you could do 9? Oh. If you're watching a game and just hanging out, could you do 9 crab cakes in 9 innings?
I think I could. Just to prove Ben wrong, because I think Ben wants me to fail. That's
yeah.
just the relationship we've had over 500 episodes and knowing him for a decade plus now. I think Ben just wants me to fail on air, and I want to say, no, I can make it through 9. There would have to be a good amount of drinks just to get everything going and packed in there, but I'd welcome the challenge.
Balance it out. So here's Jared Beck, the 7-foot lefty, top of the order for the Hot Rods with one out, no one on. First pitch strike to Adrian Santana. We are tied at 1 in the top of the fifth. Maybe a couple pitching changes, some runs being scored, so you'd have more time to get through 9 in 9 innings.
That might be a game in which pace of play, we can just put the brakes on that for a while. Maybe a good 4-hour one. Real barn burner.
Could you do 9 hot dogs in 9 innings?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't come close.
I would, honestly, my strategy would probably have to do 9 hot dogs in 3 innings.
Yeah.
And just keep a pace.
Yeah.
If you're just letting them sit there, then you're destined to fail.
Right, you know, over a few hours, like it's, and just hot dogs. Yeah, that's a lot of hot dogs.
I'm sure if you asked Joey Chestnut, could you eat 50 hot dogs in 2 hours? He'd be like, no, I don't want to do that. Give me the Nathan's time instead.
Yeah, 10 minutes or whatever they,
whatever's
on the clock.
Yeah.
Counts 2-2 on Santana, who is 0-2 tonight. Beck looking to get his first man out of the pen. Next pitch from the southpaw fouled away. Well, Jared Beck is a really intriguing player in this Orioles organization. I mean, obviously the height jumps out, 7 feet tall. You don't see a lot of 7-footers in baseball, but so much extension, the long wingspan, the ball gets on you quick. Breaking ball grounded off of his glove out to the third baseman, Estrada, throws to first just a little bit late, and it's an infield knock for Santana.
Santana, you mentioned bringing in the lefty Beck. He is a switch hitter, but he definitely prefers to hit left-handed, or at least that's what the numbers would tell you. He's a much better hitter lefty. That one, at least he gets wood on it, puts it up the middle, and even the tall 7-foot Beck can get a glove on it, but Santana moves too quick up the line. I don't think that was going to be much of a play.
They probably had a slower runner there. That ball went right to Estrada. Birds will play for two up the middle. Here's Petre. Fouls one back. It's 0-1. Yeah, going back to the point about the nine crab cakes or nine hot dogs in nine innings, yeah, I mean, I'm not a crab cake guy. I'm not really a hot dog guy either. I'd probably have two hot dogs, maybe three, and be like, I'm good.
Yeah,
like,
this has been enjoyable. Why should we ruin a good thing?
I don't want anymore.
Are you allowed to say you're not a crab cake guy here?
I don't
know. Is that the thing that just keeps on the DL?
This might be my last broadcast.
That'd be a heck of a way to announce your resignation.
They're going to have to pry me out of the booth. No offense to the Marylanders out there. 0-1, swing and a miss, it's 0-2.
The best offense for that is it just means more for them.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, honestly, if we could spin it that way. I like Old Bay seasoning. I know that Old Bay is big.
There you go. Win them back.
Yeah, I mean, in Philly, where I'm from, we've got crab fries with the Old Bay seasoning. I mean, you can't beat that. Crab fries a little different than crab cakes. Left on left, runner goes, pitch is swung on and fouled back. Beck got in on Petre's hands right there. And Santana, trying to swipe the bag, heads back to first.
You talked about how Beck puts the ball really on top of guys. It's not really big velocity from him. It's averaging around 87.6 miles per hour on the season. But
0-2, breaking ball, drops it right on in there, and Jared Beck has out number two in the fifth.
When you can drop in a curveball like that, it's going to work. And especially, again, that extension makes it play up faster. Even if the ball is only coming at a certain velocity, you only have a certain amount of time to react. You shorten up that distance with that extension, it can play like it's 94, 95.
That was a knee buckler curveball right there. Absolutely froze him. Well, here's Mac Horvath, who is 0 for 2 with a strikeout and a pop-out. We are tied at 1 in the fifth, two outs and a man on first. Santana back to the bag on the pickoff move. Beck has five pitches to work with, the four-seam and a two-seam fastball, that curveball that we just saw, and then a slider and a changeup. Tops out around 94 when he's really humming it in there. But, Sam, to your point, he's living around the high 80s right now. Pitch to Horvath is in for a strike. As a lefty, you can live with that.
Yeah.
If you got a right-hander throwing in the high 80s, probably not going to work.
Or if you're 5'11" and throwing in the high 80s.
Right.
It's not going to work. But there's a special amount of ingredients working here for him.
0-1, fouled away. And right now it seems like these rod hitters are a little early on what Beck's tossing them. Steady diet of off-speed stuff. Pitcher's duel into the middle innings here in the Dean. Beck looking to get the Birds through the fifth. Gave up an infield hit, then a strikeout. Now the 0-2 to Horvath. Just missed there. Counts 1-2.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see Santana try to test him again. Because, again, with that length, he has long limbs. It's going to take him longer to deliver the ball to home plate. If you have that speed, use it. Especially here with two outs.
Santana stays put. Horvath skies one foul down the right field line. So in the last half inning, Vance Honeycutt grounded out to second to end the frame. Mac Horvath, who was his college teammate at UNC for two seasons, made the play, threw him out. I'm sure it's weird for those guys playing against each other for the first time. Well, Beck moves over to first.
Yeah, asked Vance Honeycutt if he had asked Mac Horvath about like what it was like playing in the Orioles organization. He said actually Mac Horvath was in the area. They were hanging out around draft day.
Yeah. Yeah, Mac was at his draft party down in NC.
But just as a friend, not as a potential teammate, not as anything else. They were just catching up on life stuff.
Horvath skies one to left, a couple steps back, now one in for Cunningham. He's there to make the catch. And the inning is over. Nice job by Jared Beck to get two outs out of the bullpen in relief of Ty Weatherly. And after 4.5 in Aberdeen, we are still knotted at 1. We'll head to the bottom of the fifth after another quick break here on MILB TV and Bally Live. Birds coming to bat in the bottom of inning number five here in Aberdeen. We are still tied at one. Both teams grabbed their run in the second inning. And now the Birds in the fifth will send up Anderson, Estrada, and Cunningham. Anderson reached on a catcher's interference his last time up, and he singled back in the first. Switch hitter batting from the left side against the righty, Gary Gilhill, who's at 56 pitches, 40 strikes so far tonight. He's been really efficient. Only thrown 16 balls to this point, Sam.
Yeah.
Again, 17 now.
Well, yeah, right. But again, leaning into that reputation as somebody who's going to go right after hitters.
1-0. Check swing from Anderson, but he went too far. Crossed the home plate umpire with the call. It's 1-1. Next pitch, driven to left. Not too deep. Spikes a couple steps back. And he makes the catch. Anderson retired for out number one in the fifth. Brings up Aaron Estrada, who has 7 hits in his last 3 games. Back-to-back 3-hit games. But so far tonight, 0 for 2.
Gary Gilhill has had a very nice progression in terms of innings pitched per start as the season's gone along. 4 innings in his first start, 5 innings in his second start, and then 6 innings in each of his last 2. So he's certainly a candidate to pitch at least into the sixth if all goes well here for him.
Pitch misses downstairs to Anderson. Now, in his last 3 starts, so his previous 2 and then tonight, so far tonight, counting the 4 1/3 that he's worked, his last 3 outings, 16 1/3 innings of work, just 3 earned runs, and he has 12 strikeouts in that span. Very impressive. And then in terms of walks, just 2 walks in his last 3 starts. Left-hander Juan Rojas up in the bullpen for the Ironbirds. We'll see if he comes on for the 6th or if Jared Beck gets some more work. But Gilhill trending in the right direction. Really good numbers early on. 1-2, check swing. Pitch was low, 2-2. Sam, you mentioned the numbers last year, breakout year in the low-A Carolina League, through 108 2/3 innings, which ranked 4th in the Carolina League. He was also 7th in the league in strikeouts. And he was a Carolina League postseason all-star.
Yeah, Gary Gilhill was only 17 when he was drafted out of New York State. He didn't turn 20, or he didn't turn 18 until that September. So extremely young for the class. The Rays always knew he was going to be a little bit of a development project, but I think he's arrived, at least in terms of prospect status, even earlier than they expected.
So Estrada works the walk. The go-ahead run is on base for the Birds. We're tied at 1 in the home 5th. That brings up Jake Cunningham. I'm glad you brought up the age. Very young arm on the mound in Gilhill. How much does age play a role in the decisions to put players in certain spots on the top 30 prospect list?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, age relative to level is one of the most predictive things in terms of how good a player will be. If you are moving up the ladder very quickly, then you are probably going to be a very good player. If you are 25 and still in single A ball, that's not a good sign for your prospect status. So guys like Leo DeVries, Jesus Made with the Milwaukee Brewers, these guys who are tearing up, you know, full season ball already while still in their teenage years, and in Made's case, at the age of an American high school senior, that speaks really well to their future careers. Think about, in that same Milwaukee Brewers system, Jackson Churio a few years ago, right? We saw it early, and now we're seeing him bordering on superstar status in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and we know a thing or two about teenage superstars in Aberdeen. Jackson Holliday and Samuel Basayo came through here in 2023. And it's not often that you see guys tear it up and just burst onto the scene and just dominate every level that young, but like you said, those are the guys, you know, they're going to be stars.
Yeah, I mean, insofar as we know anything, right? Like, that's the whole thing about prospects, is that you can be very confident in a player when they look at it at single A or here in high A, and there's a lot of factors that are still going to affect their development moving forward. So it can be predictive, but it is, again, not an end-all be-all.
And that's what's great about minor league baseball. It's not just the guys that are making top prospect lists and the guys that are getting drafted high and that everybody knows about. There are good baseball players littered throughout the minors, and it's up to organizations to get them to the big leagues. And the organizations that develop players the best are normally the organizations that succeed at the big league level.
Yeah, one of the things I get asked every year is, what are you excited about for this season? My answer every year is the prospect I don't know about yet.
Cunningham chops one out to short. Nice pick by Santana. Throws to first in time. Estrada went on the pitch, so he stays out of a double play. And now the Birds with a runner at second and two gone. I like that answer. That's a really good answer. The prospect you don't know about.
Well, think about like last year, and this isn't a perfect example, but Christian Campbell was not on our Red Sox top 30 at the beginning of the year. He wasn't on, I don't think, many or even any Red Sox top 30s at the beginning of the 2024 season. Now he's the AL Rookie of the Year favorite.
Yep.
In just one quick year. I mean, these guys can develop. They can do different things. They are not robots that are programmed a certain way. They can change their trajectory, and God bless him for that, that we were talking about actual humans here.
That is crazy to think Campbell wasn't on top prospect list, and now he's got almost $70 million locked up with that extension.
Right? Yeah, good for him, good for his family, good for the Red Sox, good for Red Sox fans.
Meeting on the mound between most of the Hot Rods infield. Counts 1-0 on Stafford. Go-ahead runs at second. That's Estrada. He runs well. You figure a base hit will give the Birds the lead. We're tied at one in the home fifth. So I guess your answer to that question last year was Campbell, the prospect you didn't know about?
I heard some whispers in spring. I was in Fort Myers and Red Sox camp, and I said, you know, who's done some things that have interested you guys? And they brought up Campbell in terms of adding bat speed that we've now seen at the major league level. They thought he could be a competent defender either at second base or center field. But they liked his speed. They liked his power. He just needed to lift the ball more, which is not something he did at Georgia Tech. He started doing that very quickly in the system, and voila, here he is.
Stafford, a patient approach, takes the 2-0 for a strike. It's 2-1. Let's go back another year to 2023. Who was the guy or who were the guys that were your answers to that question a couple years ago?
Ooh, that's a good – well, Jackson Churia was one of my favorites, right? Yeah. Like, he was somebody who we knew in the DSL. He signed for decent money, but they skipped him over the Arizona Complex League completely. And – then he just jumped on the scene at Carolina, moved up to Hiawatha, Wisconsin, finished out the year at Biloxi. Now Jesus Madé is following in that same path. The Brewers really scout internationally well, and they develop those guys really well, too. They give them the building blocks to succeed so early in their careers.
Chopper to short, Stafford thrown out, inning over. No runs, no hits, no errors, and the Birds leave the go-ahead runner in scoring position in the fifth. We are still tied at one after five. We'll head to the sixth and see if the Ironbirds can keep this game tied. Stay locked in with Sam and me on the Ironbirds Broadcast Network. Still tied at one as we go to the top of the sixth inning here in Aberdeen. New arm for the Birds. Left-hander Juan Rojas takes over for Jared Beck. Beck got the final two outs of the fifth. And now a fresh inning, looking for bulk innings from Juan Rojas out of the bullpen today. The Ironbirds pitching staff a little bit taxed lately. So we'll see how deep Rojas can go. He gets Myers, Haas, and Spikes. Not an easy trio to face. 4-5-6 for the Rods. First pitch left on left to Myers is in for a strike. Ty Weatherly went 4 1/3, gave up just one run, struck out five. And Jared Beck, 2/3 of an inning, scoreless. Now it's Rojas' game. A one liner to the left side. That's into the outfield for a base hit. Noah Myers doing Noah Myers things, Sam. He's now 1-for-1, but he's reached base safely in all three of his plate appearances.
If there's anybody in the Rays organization listening to this, please get this man to AA Montgomery as quickly as possible. I'm not just saying that on behalf of Aberdeen and trying to get him out of the series by any means, but we saw the advanced approach earlier. He wasn't going to expand the zone. Two walks out of the gate here tonight. Goes down 0-1, gets a good pitch to hit, slices it the other way through the gap between the shortstop and the third baseman. It's just a good piece of hitting after a really good approach early in the game. He's basically conquered this level.
First pitch to the right-handed hitting Haas is in for a strike. Count goes to 0-1. Birds would love a 1-0. That ball missed. Birds would love a double play here. Tejada, the second baseman, shading up the middle. Big hole on the right side. 1-0, low and in. Rojas has four pitches to work with, a four-seam fastball and a cutter, and then a slider and a changeup for the off-speed. Sits around 89 to 93 with the heater. Trying to keep this game tied. Both teams got their run in the second inning, nothing since. 2-0, that's in there. Rojas was one of the guys from the Orioles organization that was selected to participate in the 2024 Arizona Fall League. And, of course, Sam and I both out there during the fall. That's how we originally connected, and that's why Sam's on the broadcast tonight, because we connected back in the Fall League. Sam, I know that you didn't get a chance to see Rojas pitch while you were out Arizona. But, again, any chance we get to talk about the Fall League, we got to take it. Overall, just all the years that you've been going out there, one thing that I noticed, it's such a gem within professional baseball. Like, not as many people that should know about it. Fly ball to right field, long run for Stafford, and that one's out of play. But what are just some of your takeaways from all the years you've been going out there?
Yeah, there really isn't another comp in a different sport, right? Like, NBA has summer league, but that's for rookies or guys trying to win contracts. There isn't this extension of the season for guys who are either trying to show off that they are the top prospects in baseball, or were injured for much of the summer and just need the extra work, or, you know, for any other circumstances. Sometimes you'll get guys like, I think Kyle Schwarber years and years ago was just looking to get healthy again to help the Cubs during a postseason run.
Yep.
So got some ABs. We saw that Jeff McNeil last year, right, with the Mets. I just love that it exists, that it gives us a little extra season to hold on to, and it's in a great setting in Arizona. Again, I can't speak highly enough of it, just that it exists, but also that it gets guys like me and other writers and prospect evaluators to see so many prospects on one stage at one time.
How many years have you been going out there?
Last year would have been my fourth year going out there, okay. But I've covered the Fall League from afar since I started covering minor league baseball in 2012, just because it is a showcase event.
And you said it. We talked about it earlier a few innings ago. Every day it seems like you're watching a minor league all-star game. But what's so cool is that these guys are wearing the big league uniforms out there.
Mm-hmm. And one thing about the AFL, too, and we got to experience this a little bit last year, too, is rules changes normally come to the AFL before they even come to the minors.
Yeah.
So we got to see that check swing challenge last year in the Arizona Fall League,
yep.
Which sounds absolutely foreign. But, again, that's like one of those little things about baseball that we've long debated, hey, what is a check swing? Maybe we can define it and review it.
Called strike three on the inner half. Well, Haas thought that was ball four. Rojas gets the strikeout, and that's a big pitch right there. Did not want to set up first and second with no outs. Instead, still a runner at first and one out, and Ryan Spikes due up. Yeah, I remember. So I was in the press box at Salt River Fields, the spring training home of the D-backs and the Rockies, the night that they debuted the ABS check swing challenge. Or not the ABS, that's the automatic ball strike.
Right.
The check swing challenge system. I mixed them up there. But it was just cool to see. And I know it was kind of blowing up all over Twitter that night, like, hey, this is a thing. Is it coming to the big leagues? And I'm sitting there like, man, I've known about this for a while now. Like, I knew this was coming.
And it's just being tested, right? I think people get very excited, or they get very confused, or, you know, emotions are all over the place when something so new and potentially revolutionary is introduced. But it's just being tested out at that level. And it's going to go through a lot of tweaks. Think about how different ABS is now than when it was first introduced to the Fall League. So don't panic. It's not coming to the major leagues next year. But it's something that could affect the game. Instead of sitting back and debating whether it was actually a check swing, let's define the thing.
1-1, swing and a miss. Yeah, and speaking of the ABS system, like the automatic ball strike, not even the check swing, the ABS system is much more advanced than the check swing challenge system.
Yes.
But seeing it during big league spring training games where every, like, the regular fans and people who follow the game are seeing it for the first time. But, you know, we see it in the Arizona Fall League, and, you know, we've seen it in different minor leagues over the last couple of years. And it's cool, like, as somebody immersed in it and working in professional baseball, you're like, this is nothing new to me. Like, I've seen this. I know what this is all about.
Yeah.
Like, I knew about it first.
But I love when it breaks through, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've got friends who will they'll go to baseball games in the summer. They'll follow along, but they're not following every minor league pitch, everything that's happening across the sport. So when that was introduced in spring training and people were like, hey, I kind of like the challenges.
Line drive to third. Estrada makes the catch, and he will double up the runner Myers to end the inning. Myers was off on the pitch trying to jumpstart the offense, and it turns into a line-out 5-3 double play, and Rojas gets out of it. No runs on a hit, no errors, no one left on. We'll keep the convo going when we go to the bottom of the sixth, still tied at one on MILB-TV and Bally Live. Bottom of the sixth inning here in Aberdeen. We are still tied at one. Birds and Rods in game two of a six-game set. Leandro Arias leads off the inning with Tejada and Mordan to follow. First pitch fouled back by the switch hitter batting from the right side against the new arm for the Hot Rods. It's left-hander Jackson Lancaster. Lancaster, another one of those Arizona Fall League guys this past year. Can't get away from him. 0-1, fly ball down the right field line, hooking out of play. And that's where it'll drop. It's 0-2.
Yeah, Lancaster's got an interesting backstory. He spent some time at Missouri and Louisiana Tech and the Pioneer League before joining the Rays. He's got tons of swing and miss and chase on his mid-80s slider.
Lancaster takes over for Gary Gill-Hill, who threw 75 pitches, 50 strikes in five innings of one-run ball. Four hits, two walks. He struck out five. 0-2, that's high and away. The Birds are trying to break through and take their first lead of the night. The Hot Rods grab the game's opening run on an RBI triple from John Diaz in the second. But the Birds answered. Anudis Mordan, a game-tying safety squeeze sacrifice bunt to bring home a run. And now a chopper to third. It eats up Haas and trickles into shallow center. Arias is aboard to start the sixth. Sam, it's a tough game for bringing home runs. Any base runner you get means something, especially a leadoff base runner. Doesn't matter how it happens. Now we'll see if the Birds can cash in.
Yeah, and again, we've talked about them trying to be pests on the base paths, trying some different things, scoring on a safety squeeze. Now you got a runner at first and no outs and working towards the bottom of the order. Kind of wonder if Arias would consider running here.
Here's Angel Tejada. Singled his first time up, a strikeout his last time. Swings over that pitch. It's 0-1. Lancaster's got a fastball, a slider, and a changeup to work with. His longest outing this season is 2 2/3. See how deep he goes in this one. 0-1. Make it 0-2. That one's right there to Tejada. Now he'll have to protect. Lancaster originally drafted by the Mariners in 2019. Tejada flicks one down the right field line. Diaz is over. He makes the running grab. Throw off balance to first is a little bit late. Tried to double up Arias there. But Tejada is out number one in the inning. That brings up Mordan. Long run for Diaz, but he got there.
I like that he tried to throw it over to first base. You never know if that's going to work. As long as the throw's not completely wild, and it wasn't. It got past the first baseman, but Jackson Lancaster doing his PFPs, coming in to back up first base and get the ball back.
He was ready. Two innings in each of his last two starts. There's a hot shot to the right side from Mordan into right center. Long throw to second, and they got him. Wow. Arias was a little bit too far off of second, could not get back, and that's the go-ahead runner at second base, just cut down on a back pick.
That's something that can't happen. You get a runner at second base with two outs, or with less than two outs. You're really pushing something here, and he just took too wide of a turn. And Diaz, who you just saw throw the ball hard and accurately, why test that arm again? Why even give him a chance to throw you out for the second out?
Instead of first and second, one out, runner at first, two outs, and here is Jalen Vasquez. First pitch strike. Lancaster's done a nice job peppering the zone. He's allowed two hits, but only one guy on base. His last outing was April 25th at home against Greensboro. Pitched twice in that series. Two hitless innings in that April 25th outing. Struck out three, didn't walk anybody either. Four of his six outings this year are scoreless. He's allowed just two runs in nine innings with 13 strikeouts and just five walks. 1-1, low and away. Lancaster was a part of the Hot Rods championship team last year. Pitched two scoreless innings in the playoffs, one in the division series, one in the championship series. Vasquez gets one up in the air, not too deep, right center. Diaz is over, calls everybody off, makes the catch, and the Birds go down quietly here in the bottom of the sixth. No runs on two hits, no errors, one man left on. We'll head to the seventh, still knotted at one. Stay locked in with Sam and me on the Iron Birds Broadcast Network. Ironbirds and Hot Rods tied at one as we go to the top of the seventh inning here in Aberdeen. Both teams got their run in the second inning. Just a bunch of zeros on the scoreboard ever since. And now here in the top of the seventh, left-hander Juan Rojas goes back to work. And he gets the bottom three in the Rods order. It's Diaz, Martinez, and Brecker. Rojas did a nice job getting through a quick sixth inning, gave up a leadoff base hit, but then a strikeout and got a double play ball to end the frame. And now Diaz, who brought home the Hot Rods only run with the triple in the second, takes a first pitch ball low and in. Counts 1-0. Two evenly matched teams going into tonight's game. The Ironbirds averaging just under 5 runs per game at 4.9, sixth best in the Sally League. On the other side, Bowling Green averaging 4.8 runs per game, ninth best in the Sally League. So the fact that they're right around both 5 runs per game and there's two teams in between them in terms of runs per game, it tells you that the runs per game in the Sally League kind of all bunched up early on. 1-1, that misses high and in. And Sam, I mean, looking at the numbers down the board, very similar stats on both sides in terms of ERA. Birds came in with a 4.20 ERA, the Hot Rods 4.15. Strikeouts per nine, both just over 10. I mean, really evenly matched.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the fact that that's not reflected in the records necessarily is, a story of just it being the first month of the season, but also it could be situational, right? Like, where is that 4.20 ERA coming from? If you're giving up a lot of runs in games that are already blowouts, then, you know, that inflates the ERA but doesn't count so much in the record. It's just one loss.
Right. Swinging a foul tip. I mean, another set of numbers that maybe don't tell the whole story. We were kind of discussing that earlier when we were talking about some of the numbers for pitchers, hitters, some of the stats we both look at.
Yeah, we're still in that noisy area of the season. It's getting less and less noisy the more games that happen, especially as we turn to May tomorrow and the second month of the season. But it's still a little noisy this early.
2-2 misses low, and the count is full on Diaz. Don't want to put the leadoff man on, especially in a game where runs are hard to come by.
I thought Diaz was looking a little overeager. He made all three outs in the last inning. I think was building off that momentum, but has worked the count full now.
Payoff pitch skipped in the dirt, and the Hot Rods have the leadoff man on. Diaz sprinting to first, thinking about making a turn, but Anderson gets to the ball quickly at the backstop. So the leadoff man is on for the Hot Rods. That brings up Martinez, the catcher. Rojas made a start in his first outing of the season, went two innings in that game during the first homestand against Hub City. Since then, he's worked out of the bullpen. Two-plus innings in all four of his outings entering play, and he's completed three innings in each of his last two. Now Ironbirds pitching coach Jeremy Heilman out for a discussion with most of the Ironbirds infield. Nanutis Mordaunt will stay back at first base and talk shop with Diaz. Actually, now he's going to – oh, no, he's staying put. Thought he was going to join the party.
I wonder if they didn't like that last pitch. It missed by plenty. It was a bouncer. Clearly it went all the way to the backstop.
Yeah.
Maybe there was something the pitching coach didn't like there. Just settling him in. Especially in a one-all game like this. You can't let two runners on with no outs. Really find yourself in a hole real fast.
Rojas cleans his cleats behind the mound. He's going to step back on the rubber. See what he can do with Martinez at the dish. Go-ahead run is at first base. No outs here with the game tied at one in the seventh. First pitch bunted right back to Rojas. He throws to second, and he didn't get him. Late call from the base umpire, Gustavo Garza, but he signaled safe. That was a bullet that Rojas threw to second. Arias with the stretch at the bag. I thought they had him by maybe an eyelash.
I think he was realizing with every motion that he was going to have to get it faster and faster and faster to second base. He thought that was going to be a routine play with the bunt that went a little bit harder than Martinez, I think, wanted it to right back at the pitcher.
Right, it rolled. It didn't just die there.
But Diaz, who we've seen be energetic plenty in these last couple innings, even considered rounding first, going for second on that walk, right? He was hustling knowing that it was going to be a close play, and credit to him for just getting in there.
So now another discussion on the mound. Anudis Mordaunt and Ethan Anderson out to chat. Runners at first and second, no outs. I like the aggressiveness from Rojas to go for the lead runner in that situation. And he made a good throw. A lot of times you'll see a pitcher rush that and sail it into center field, left center. But he put it where he needed to.
I would have just liked to have seen him be faster coming off the mound. Yeah. I think that was part of it. He saw how hard it was hit right back at him. He's like, okay, this is an opportunity for me to get the lead runner, not realizing just how quick Diaz was going. And that caused him to rush things. I wonder if they were discussing there what's going to happen if there is a bunt here.
So the Birds bring the corners in. Mordaunt is way up at first. Estrada about a step in at third. Now both charge. Bunt pulled back. It's 1-0. Well, the Ironbirds showcasing that bunt defense. Estrada came in. So did Mordaunt at the corners. Arias, the shortstop, covered third. And Tejada staying near that second base bag. Counts 1-0. Mordaunt is way in. Bunted foul. It's 1-1. Anudis Mordaunt is determined to cut off this bunt if it's dropped down fair.
I think he could feel Brecker's breath at this point, given how close he's getting to the box.
Yeah, he better be sure Brecker doesn't pull back and slash. I don't think we'll see that. Runs hard to come by tonight. We're knotted at one in the top of the seventh. Juan Rojas trying to get out of trouble. A walk and a fielder's choice on a sack bunt. This one bunted hard to third, and the play to third not in time. Estrada hesitated, and the bases are loaded with no outs.
That was going to be a difficult play at first base. Tejada had to rush over to first after covering second so closely for potential pickoff. I still don't think there was any chance they were going to get. No,
I think he might have heard two different things from guys in the infield there. It seemed like Arias wanted him to throw to third, but I'm sure he was hearing first from somebody. So two sacrifice bunts where the Hot Rods are just trying to give up and out. The Ironbirds don't execute, and now the bases are loaded. Walk. Fielder's choice on a bunt, fielder's choice on a bunt. And now the Hot Rods, not only can they take the lead, but they can add a cushion by doing so. Back to the top for Santana. The switch hitter fouls one back, and the count goes to 0-1. Well, that play at second, on any given night, that could get called the other way.
It could.
The umpire could just call that out.
I would be interested in seeing a replay. We don't have one available now, but I'm sure they would have sent that to New York.
Right, and then that would have changed the entire inning. And it's probably a play where I don't know if the manager in either dugout argues whether it's called out or safe. Nobody from the Ironbirds dugout argued that they called Diaz safe at second. If they called him out, I don't think Rafi Velasquez would have had an issue with it. Maybe he would have. Who knows? 2-1, grounded foul up the first base line. Mordaunt touches it. That thing was spinning.
I think Santana thought there was a chance that was going to kick back into play.
So 2-2 now on Santana with Petre and Horvath to follow.
Again, Santana, a switch hitter, typically more productive from the left side. So you're getting him on his weaker side here. But he can still put the ball in play. And with this infield in and his speed, there could still be some interesting things here.
2-2, swing and a miss. That's a massive strikeout right there. Gets out number one, and Rojas keeps all three runners where they are. We are still tied.
That's just a good two-strike pitch by Rojas. Down and in. If he's going to make contact, it's probably going to be on the ground. You hope it's at one of your fielders for a potential play at home or a double play. But with the infield in, they were definitely going to be thinking about home. But the strikeout, don't have to worry about that.
Here's Emilian Petre. Infield in for the Birds all the way around. Pitch misses outside, 1-0. Bases still loaded for the Hot Rods. Diaz at third, Martinez at second, and Brecker at first. The Birds are trying to keep this game tied at one.
Still playing with the infield in. I'm a little surprised the middle infielders aren't playing a little further back, potentially for that double play that would end the inning.
1-0. Popped up, shallow right center. Stafford's in, so is Honeycutt. Honeycutt takes charge, gets behind it, makes the catch. Runner headed for the plate. Here's the throw, the tag from Anderson. They got him! Vance Honeycutt to Ethan Anderson, an 8-2 double play, inning over, game still tied. Vance Honeycutt showing off the arm. It had to be right on the money. It was Ethan Anderson with the sweep tag, and John Diaz thrown out at the plate to end the threat. It's time to stretch here in Aberdeen. We are still tied at one. We'll go to the home seventh after this on the Ironbirds Broadcast Network. Ironbirds and Hot Rods still tied at one, bottom of the seventh inning. Vance Honeycutt, Ethan Anderson, Aaron Estrada, the top three in the Birds order, coming to bat in the home seventh. And how about the two guys that helped the Birds end the top of the seventh, Sam? Honeycutt to Anderson, a fly ball to center. Honeycutt makes the catch for out number two, throws one on the money home. On one hop, Ethan Anderson catches it, sweep tag, and the Birds preserve the game tied at 1-1.
When you come flying into games like I do sometimes, you're not going to always see guys' best skills on display. That's just not how baseball works. But Vance Honeycutt, somebody with plus arm strength, with plus-plus defense, putting it all on display there, living up to the hype as a center fielder, that really was the perfect throw. One hop to Anderson behind the plate, made the tag easy, one sweep it throw. I don't think they would have drawn it up that way. I mean, I think there were other ways they foresaw getting out of the inning, but lean into the tools you have, and getting Honeycutt in the middle of the diamond like that, not many players could make that throw at any level.
Right. No notes. I mean, everything went as planned right there. Honeycutt took charge in center, got behind the baseball, strong throw, and Ethan Anderson showing off his tagging skills as well. 2-1 fouled back. It's 2-2 on Vance. It was such a close play at home, and good speed on third. Diaz, an aggressive runner. You were talking about that last inning. And he's got good speed and a good slide, but Anderson just got a piece of him with the sweep tag.
It was going to take a perfect throw, and they got a perfect throw.
2-2's high and away counts full from Jackson Lancaster, the lefty who threw a scoreless sixth. He's back out for the seventh.
Now, Honeycutt's done a good job of working the count full here. I just wonder what his adrenaline level is coming off a throw like that.
Drop him one in the zone and let him blast it out of the yard. 3-2, grounded to third. Nice backhand stop by Haas. Throw to first. Now, he got him. It's close at first, but Honeycutt retired on a bang-bang play. 5-3 on the putout. Some delayed calls from Gustavo Garza today. And I'm waiting to make my call, but I got to wait for his call.
I appreciate that he's taking a second to think about it. You know, like, we're in a situation here. There's only two umpires, one behind the plate, one's in the infield. Take a beat to recollect your thoughts, but.
Anderson rips one to the right center gap. Myers is back, but he tracks it down shy of the track. It's a loud out number two. Anderson gave that one a ride, but he is gone. And it's up to Aaron Estrada to keep the inning going. Estrada walked his last time up. He's 0-2. I don't know, Sam. I might be feeling a walk-off tonight. We haven't had one
this
season.
That would be special.
10 walk-off wins in 2023, my first full year here. 8 last year. The Birds have a flair for the dramatic. Neither team has scored since the second inning. We're tied at 1, bottom 7. Got to give a lot of credit to the pitchers on both sides tonight. Defensively, pretty clean game. 2 errors for the Hot Rods, but both catchers' interference calls. Swing and a miss there. It is 1-1 now on Estrada.
That was a little too overeager of a swing from Estrada. You can see him stepping out of the box there. That was almost inside the batter's box, not even clipping the plate. I think he was trying to do too much with that swing.
1-1 from Lancaster, swing and a miss. I have to really make sure I enunciate when I'm saying Jackson Lancaster, because I'm from the Philly area, and in Pennsylvania, the city of Lancaster is close by. And everybody from PA says Lancaster.
Of course.
But in California, it's Lancaster, California, and it's Jackson Lancaster. I really got to enunciate.
It's like how my accent sometimes comes out when I say wicked. I've been holding myself back from saying that's a wicked splitter.
Hopefully you can use it for a wicked walk-off in the bottom of the
ninth. There we go. That's a promise if it happens.
2-2, that's high. Counts full. Honeycutt almost beat out that grounder to third. Anderson almost had a gapper, but almost doesn't get it done. But still, a good approach from both guys at the top of the order. And now the three-hole hitter, Estrada's worked the count to 3-2. Payoff pitch, fouled away. Oh, that got a piece of Martinez somewhere. Kind of rolled over. It looks like it got the top of his right or left foot. He's holding both feet. Maybe he got his hand, too.
It looks like his left foot.
Yeah, left foot. He's in a lot of pain. He is in a lot of pain right now. The head athletic trainer for the Hot Rods, Ruben Santiago, is out to check on him along with manager Rafi Valenzuela. Counts 3-2 on Estrada. 2 outs, no one on, bottom 7, tied at 1. Sam, I got to ask you this because we were talking about it earlier, and you were saying that what you want to see throughout a season is the prospect you don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Over all your years of writing about prospects and covering prospects, minor league baseball, has there ever been a case that stood out where you saw a guy play either in person or just watching video where you're like, wow, that dude's an absolute stud. People don't know about him yet, and then he became a stud in the big leagues?
When he became a stud in the big leagues. I mean, Jackson Churio is one of my best examples. I remember pushing hard for him super early where I think I annoyed Jim and Jonathan about it. I was just like, this Churio guy's really good. And they're like, yeah, we get it. I'm like, no, he's really, really good. And they're like, okay, all right. And I may have exceeded that level of annoying now with Jesus Made.
Okay.
Somebody who looked really good in the Dominican Summer League last year, but again, our access to data now is better than ever, so you can point to things and saying he was hitting the ball as hard as Jazz Chisholm Jr. and Jose Ramirez at the major league level.
Wow.
Already, and he's not even 18 years old yet. So I'll have my guys that I'll ride hard for. But that's the beauty of this job is to see these guys early and get onto them. And sometimes you get a tip from a scout or an exec about it. And I love that, too.
3-2 to Estrada. Called strike 3, top of the zone. So the catcher, Martinez, is okay after the visit from the trainer. And on the next pitch, Estrada goes down on strikes. 2 scoreless for Jackson Lancaster out of the Hot Rods bullpen. He set down 4 in a row. And after 7, we are still tied at 1. We'll go to the 8th, see if the Birds can keep this game tied. Stay locked in on MILB TV and Bally Live. Top of the eighth inning, the Ironbirds and Hot Rods are tied at one. Both teams got their run in the second inning. A lot of zeros on the scoreboard tonight. The Ironbirds out hitting the Hot Rods 7-4. Birds didn't get much going offensively. They went down 1-2-3 in the bottom of the seventh. A couple hard hit balls, but that's it. Juan Rojas back out for the eighth. Horvath, Myers, and Haas do up for the Hot Rods. And Sam, before the break, I had asked you about some guys that you've seen at the minor league level that you were on them early. Maybe they weren't getting the national recognition. Then they became a stud at the big league level. And you said Jackson Churio was a big one for you. Swing and a miss there from Horvath, 0-1. So now I got to ask you the question because we were talking about during the break. You said that one of your first interviews working the job covering minor leaguers was interviewing Mike Trout.
Mm-hmm.
So give me a short list of like favorite interviews that you've done over the years.
Ooh, that's a good question. Blake Snell is definitely one of them. Blake Snell, when he was first coming up through the Rays system, was just always somebody who was confident in his stuff but willing to talk about it. The Blake Snell you see in the major leagues, the guy who always seems a little laid back, willing to talk, willing to share, and now is, you know, signing a massive deal with the Dodgers and multi-time Cy Young winner. That's who he's always been, and it was always super refreshing to talk to him. I remember reaching out to him to talk for the podcast, and that's when we used to DM all these players through the MILB account, and he just reached out to me. He was like, "Hey, man, I have your number. Like, just text me at any time." And I was like, "Oh, all right." And that's when he was emerging as a top 100 prospect and one of the best starting pitching prospects in all of baseball, but he still had that humility about him.
Breaking ball called strike three on Horvath. Good pitch there. Backdoor breaker from Rojas. And Horvath is out number one. That brings up Myers. Bullpen action for the Hot Rods. Hayden Snellsire, the right-hander for Bowling Green, loosening up. That's a good one, Blake Snell. I mean, just from hearing him talk in interviews and just interacting with fans on social media over the years, he seems like an all-around good dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say I know every player personally because I've interviewed him a few times.
Yeah.
Like, you only get a little window into their lives. But whenever I chatted with him, he was a great guy to talk to. Another one who comes up.
Ground ball out to second. Tejada, underhand flip to first in time. And for the first time tonight, the Ironbirds retire Noah Myers. So two gone here in the eighth.
Another one who comes up in my mind immediately is Vinny Pasquantino, who fans in Kansas City obviously love. I think across baseball certainly love. He just needs to be healthy and out there a little bit more for Kansas City, who is coming off a postseason appearance themselves.
Yeah, but fan favorite. He's hilarious on social media.
I remember joking with him about him stealing a base because obviously he's not a very fast player as a first baseman.
Yeah.
And we talked about printing shirts. Within a half an hour, I think he sent me a design for a shirt. I don't believe he ever sold it because if he did, I would like some royalties off that. Pun not intended. But, yeah, Vinny Pasquantino, another guy, not a high draft pick, you know, coming out of Old Dominion, somebody who has had to fight for everything he's gotten in pro baseball, but has always carried that certain humility with him.
Counts 1-1 on Hunter Haas. Takes outside 2-1. Rojas looking for a 1-2-3 eighth. Pasquantino, a fellow paisano, who's representing Italy in the last WBC. I assume he will again next year. But that's just a guy that, like, I feel like anybody around him, like, you feel the good vibes.
Yeah. And it's even better when clubhouse guys are good players, right? There are those glue types who understand, you know, the guys like Kike Hernandez, who understand that they have a certain role in the clubhouse and be a jack of all trades. But you can be a superstar and a good guy, too.
3-1 popped up behind home plate. Ethan Anderson tosses the mask aside, and he puts that one away in foul ground to end the inning. Nice job by Juan Rojas. He set down five in a row. A 1-2-3 eighth. He's cruising. We'll see if the Birds can get some runs, or at least a run. We're tied at one after 7.5. We'll go to the bottom of the eighth next here on the Ironbirds Broadcast Network. Right-hander Hayden Snellsire is the new pitcher for the Hot Rods here in the bottom of the eighth. The Birds and the Rods tied at one in game two of this six-game series. Snellsire, the third pitcher of the night for Bowling Green. And he gets Cunningham, Stafford, and Arias, 4-5-6. First pitch to the left fielder, Cunningham in for a strike. And the count's 0-1. I've got Sam Dykstra from MLB.com with me in the booth tonight as my guest color commentator. Really well-played game between these two teams. This one shot to right. Diaz is back at the track. Now he comes in, and he makes the catch. A fly out for Cunningham to start the eighth.
With that loopy route he was taking out there, I thought there was a chance that maybe that was going to get pushed out. But you look at the flag right now. Wind's pretty dead all across this ballpark. Just not enough juice in it.
Yeah, no wind, but just based off Diaz's route there, yeah, I'm thinking, like, where's this one going to go?
Because it might have been a wall scraper.
It was a roundabout route out there. So here is Stafford. Shows bunt, pulls back, takes a strike. The third baseman, Haas, was way back. See if he tries to actually drop one down. Sam, before the break, I was asking you about some of the best interviews you've done with players throughout your career. You told me Mike Trout was one that stands out, one of your first interviews. Blake Snell, Vinny Pasquantino, some good personalities there.
Yeah, one other one I'll throw out there is Julio Rodriguez, who we know now is like having a megawatt smile, right?
Yeah.
Like one of the best personalities in all of baseball. But I bring him up because in the minor leagues, he was somebody, you know, signed out of the Dominican Republic, basically taught himself English with the Mariners' help, but was always willing to do interviews in English whenever we spoke to him. And I give those guys all the credit. I mean, it's so hard to come to a new country, learn a new language, and then speak in that language in ways that you are going to be well understood and you can tell your story. The Julio that you see in Seattle, he was that every step of the way. And one of my favorite things about him is people thought he was going to be maybe an above-average runner or somebody, as you would fill out, would lose some speed. He took that as a challenge and was like, I'm going to show you I'm at least a plus runner. And that's what he's been. I mean, he's been locked into center field. It used to be a debate of who was going to be the future center fielder for Seattle, him or Jared Kelnick. Well, we know who won that one.
Yeah, he's off to a pretty solid start in his career. He's got some good amount of money in the bank as well with that big extension. But, yeah, just a great personality. A guy that you'd think within a few years could be, if he's not already, one of the faces of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that moment in Seattle, right, where he was participating in the home run derby, I think was one of the coolest things for that event.
Check swing, grounder up the first base line, tough play, and Stafford is retired for out number two. Well, they didn't want to swing at that, but ball met bat, and 1-3 on the putout. That brings up Arias with two gone here in the eighth. We're still tied at one. See who wants to score another run tonight. Hayden Snellsire, 24 years old, from Monroeville, PA, 17th round pick of the Rays in 2023 out of Randolph-Macon College in Virginia. Another small school guy. So far this season, five games, a 1.74 ERA, 14 strikeouts, just two walks. Neither team has scored since the second inning. Swing and a miss, 1-1.
He's got an interesting delivery. It's basically over the top. It almost looks like he's rearing back and then coming forward like a catapult. He's got a fastball around the mid-90s and then plays off that with a slider. Perfect two-pitch mix for a reliever.
1-1. Softly hit in the air, third base side foul ground. Haas is over, and he makes the catch. Birds go down 1-2-3 for the second straight inning, and we are still tied at 1 after 8. Somebody's got to win this one tonight. We'll see if and when one of these teams wants to score another run. We'll go to the top of the ninth. Stay locked in with us on MILB TV and Bally Live. Aberdeen 1, Bowling Green 1, top of the ninth inning here at Ripken Stadium. Neither team has scored since the second inning. It's been a really well-played game, great pitching, great defense. And on offensively, I mean, when you've got great pitching and great defense working in sync, it's tough to hit. Both of these teams trying to grind out at-bats, nothing doing lately. But here in the top of the ninth, Juan Rojas back to work. Ryan Spikes leads things off for BG. Swings at the first pitch, fouls it down the right field line. It's Spikes, Diaz, and Martinez. Sam, I go back to the seventh inning, that fly-out double play, that 8-2 double play to cut down the go-ahead run at the plate to end the inning. That is the absolute difference right now.
Yeah, when you talk about the most exciting plays in baseball, right, some people say the triple because it gets everybody on their feet. Some people say the inside the park home run, the grand slam. I love an outfield assist, yeah. Man. Like, everybody knows you are trying to score, especially on a play at home like that. Everybody knows you're trying to score. It's a tie game like this. Vance Honeycutt has to come through with a perfect throw. Anderson has to come through with a perfect tag. So many things have to go right, and they did in that moment. I love it.
That's why we're still tied. Vance Honeycutt to Ethan Anderson. Fly out for out number two, and then out number three at the plate, Diaz, who is on deck. There's a fly ball to deep center. It sends Honeycutt back. He's drifting. He leaps. Did he get it? No, he didn't. It hit off the batter's eye, and that's over the wall for a home run. A leadoff home run in the top of the ninth for Ryan Spikes, and Bowling Green back on top 2-1.
It's too bad. Rojas was really flying there. You look at that coming into this inning. Three innings pitched, one hit, one walk, three strikeouts, and goes up against a righty. Good job by Spikes just staying through it, driving it to the deepest part of the ballpark. Like you said, off the batter's eye. Honeycutt looked like he thought he had a chance, was getting turned around a few times. Maybe if he had a better beat on it, it could have been a more or a closer play on the jump at the wall, but Spikes hit that one a long way.
Yeah, just the crack of the bat. It was one of those where it doesn't look like a no-doubter, but it sounded good, and just based off Honeycutt going back on that one. There's a liner to left center. That's down for a hit. Cunningham over to cut it off quickly. Diaz thinking too. Here's the throw in, the tag from Tejada, and they got him. Well, Diaz getting aggressive again on the bases. He is thrown out. A smile on his face. Laughing with Tejada over there at second, but Diaz gets a hit, and he's right back in the dugout.
That might be smiling to cover up some pain, I think.
Yeah.
Trying to laugh it off as if, like, oh, man, wasn't that a whoopsie-doo? I mean, again, that can't happen. First base would have been totally fine here with no outs and kept the pressure on the Ironbirds, but giving them a gift of an out.
Yeah. Cunningham with a good throw to second. Tejada applied the tag. They had plenty of time. Diaz just a little bit too aggressive. There's the 1-0 to Martinez outside. In the bottom of the ninth, the Birds got to play catch-up. 7-8-9 due up. Tejada, Mordan, and Vasquez. Bowling Green took the series opener yesterday 16-7. It was 11-4 after 8. Then Bowling Green got 5 off of Tejada, the position player, pitching. Then the Birds added 3 in the bottom of the ninth. A lot went down in the final 3 innings yesterday. Birds had a lead into the 7th, 3-2. In yesterday's game, and then a lot of runs. So far tonight, just 3 combined runs between the two squads. Left on left for Rojas, trying to get Martinez. 2-1, that's outside, 3-1. All right, Sam, I got to hit you with another question here. I'm going to make you dig a little bit.
Okay.
Of all the 4 years that you've been out in the Arizona Fall League,
mm-hmm.
Best interview or story could be either that you've done out
ooh,
there.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, specifically that, AFL.
Specifically AFL, okay. I really enjoyed the one with Jonathan Pintaro last year.
Okay.
I've had some people come up to me about that one. Jonathan Pintaro, a pitching prospect in the Mets system, now in their top 30. But somebody at this time last year was pitching an independent ball in the Pioneer League. Just somebody who had never gotten a chance to pitch an affiliated ball. The Mets went out and got him. He basically was told in the middle of a start that he had been signed. He was wondering why he was taken out of a game and was told, hey, you got to pack your bags, and went to Brooklyn pretty quickly after that. Ended the year in the Fall League because the Mets just wanted to get more looks at him. And the cutter really played. They deepened his arsenal a little bit. But I just really enjoy those stories. I mean, yeah, you're going to get some superstars, but you're going to get some guys who have come out of seemingly nowhere. And I don't want to say the Pioneer League is nowhere, but they've built their careers, and the AFL is just another chapter.
0-1 fouled back by Brecker. It's 0-2. And that's a great one that you bring up. I love the stories where the guy's story is great, and his is. And I legitimately, I remember standing next to you while
you
were doing that interview.
Yeah, you helped set that up. Yeah, it was in Scottsdale.
I helped
remember
set
very
that
clearly.
One up. Yeah, I was leaning on the side of the first base dugout off to the side while you did the interview, and I was talking to a couple other people at the ballpark. But I remember it vividly because I overheard some of it at the time, and I'm like, wow, this is like a really cool story. And what struck me about it was like he was so humble about it. Like, and he's like, hey, man, like kind of like, hey, I know where I came from, and, you know, going through the indie ranks, low-level college ball to get here. Like, he was really appreciative of his opportunity.
Yeah, you stick with baseball for that long for that reason, to get opportunities like that. And I don't think he wasn't boasting himself and saying, like, I deserve this all along. He appreciated what the Mets were giving him. He had earned what the Mets were giving him, given what the stuff was and the results were. And that's continued into this year. He started out the year at Double-A Binghamton. Wouldn't be surprised if he heads to Triple-A Syracuse before long.
Big 2-2 pitch coming to Brian Brecker here from Juan Rojas. Misses outside, counts full. Runner at first, one out. A leadoff home run from Spikes here in the ninth to put the Hot Rods ahead. Well, Sam, I didn't even get a chance to ask you before Spikes hit the go-ahead homer, and it's obviously a little bit harder now, down one versus tied, but are you going to be the first walk-off of the season? First guest to take home a walk-off win, we'll see. I'm kind of feeling it. Rojas with another walk, and looks like that's going to be at the end of the line for the left-hander. Brecker down to first, Martinez to second, and Ironbirds manager Ryan Gaul is going to make the move to the bullpen. First four have reached for Bowling Green here in the ninth. Homer, single, walk, walk. And right-hander Alejandro Mendez is coming in. We'll get you the final line on Rojas. Well, we can't yet because he's responsible for both on base, but in terms of how deep did he go, he goes two-plus innings in this one. Three-plus, actually. I had that wrong. It was three-plus. But, Sam, we'll keep it here and chat because, you know, we've got the time.
Yeah.
And just overall, some impressions on both squads here in this really competitive game.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting to see both teams get aggressive in certain areas. We kind of expected that, again, because the Orioles system right now is so heavy on speed guys, and they're kind of turning a leaf in terms of what this organization can be moving forward, given the talent that's there. So they've been aggressive. They only have the one run to show for it. But on the Bowling Green side, we've seen some of the similar stuff. I mean, we've seen some good defensive play, specifically at shortstop with Adrian Santana. We've seen some good center field play from Vance Honeycutt on the other side with Aberdeen. It's been a fun one to watch just because, yeah, you look at it, it's 2-1, you think, like, there's not a lot of offense. There's been a lot of defense that's gone into that.
Really nice plays on both sides. And in terms of what the Ironbirds have done, cutting down a runner at the plate, runner at second, it's been fun to watch. 2-1, the Hot Rods lead it. Right-hander Alejandro Mendez into the game, replacing Juan Rojas. Rojas went three-plus innings in relief, did a nice job, ran into some trouble here in the ninth. But now Mendez tasked with getting the final two outs in the inning. Here's the leadoff man, Adrian Santana. So Rojas goes 3 1/3. Forgot that Diaz got himself thrown out on the bases. Count quickly 1-0. Santana up for the fifth time. He's 1-for-4. Slashes one foul. Third base side, 1-1.
We're going to see a heavy diet of fastballs from Mendez here in the early going to begin the year. It's been 74% fastballs. He'll mix in some sliders in the low 80s. That's a good drop between his mid-90s fastball and that slider.
1-1 slapped down the third baseline, 1-2. Double play ball would be huge right here just to get the Birds out of this and go back to the dugout needing just 1 to tie, 2 to win. They'll play for two up the middle, Arias and Tejada. Corner infielders back behind their respective bases. 1-2 from Mendez, grounded foul. leadoff home run from Ryan Spikes here in the ninth inning has put Bowling Green back on top. After neither team had scored for six straight innings. Mendez taking his time out on the mound. 1-2, breaking ball downstairs, 2-2.
That is the time to go with the breaking ball, obviously, with a couple balls to spare. But it's interesting that he would do that in my eyes because it seemed like Santana was late on every fastball. He's been fouling it off the other way. Go with the slider there just to change up speeds, but maybe you go right back to the fastball, speed things up again.
2-2, he does go with the heater, misses high and away. And now he just has to come with something in the zone. The Birds don't want to let this thing unravel. Already down 2-1, two on with one out. Payoff pitch slapped into the Hot Rods dugout and back out onto the field of play. Yeah, you got to be ready for that in the dugout.
And again, that's Santana being late on the fastball. It's absolutely a fastball count. This guy's going to be heater dominant. That was a protective swing.
3-2 again. Grounded to the left side. Arias has it to Tejada for one at second, over to first, not in time. The Birds get the middle runner. That was a really nice turn. Not one that you expect to turn two on. But they get the second out of the inning.
Especially with the speedy Santana. I mean, he is such a good defensive shortstop, and a reason for that is because he is fast. He's at least a plus runner. So if they were going to turn two, it was going to have to be perfect. That was about as close as they were going to get, honestly. He was even pulling up as he was getting into first and got there comfortably.
Really smooth from Arias and Tejada. Runner goes for second, and Anderson just going to hold on to it. Fake throw down. It's a stolen base for Santana. Just talking about his speed. So now second and third for the Hot Rods with two down. Emilian Petre is the batter, counts 0-1 on him. Hot Rods up 2-1 here in the ninth. A one slider misses low and in.
Mendez is somebody who doesn't throw that slider for a strike very often. It's going to be a chase pitch. And that's something you have to worry about a little bit here because with that runner on third base, you can't afford a pass ball or a wild pitch here.
1-1, good pitch there. Gets a swing and a miss, 1-2. Trying to strand the two on base that he inherited. Well, one of the guys he inherited was forced out. But the point is trying to strand two. 1-2 pitch, got him. Mendez blows it by the two-hole hitter, Petre, and the inning is over. But the Hot Rods regain the lead. A leadoff home run from Ryan Spikes is the difference. They get the run on two hits, no errors. They leave two. Birds need one to keep it going, two to win. Bottom of the ninth coming up next here on MILB-TV and Bally Live. Bowling Green 2, Aberdeen 1, bottom of the ninth inning here at Ripken Stadium in Aberdeen. Angel Tejada, Anudis Mordaunt, and Jalen Vasquez, the bottom three in the Birds order, due up against Hayden Snellsire, the right-hander from the Hot Rods, who worked a 1-2-3 eighth. Well, here we go, Sam. Birds need one to tie and keep this thing going, two to win it. No walk-off wins yet this year. That could change. 10 walk-off wins in 2023, 8 last year. And does that mean anything for this year? No, it does not. But just want to point out it's happened a lot here recently. Swing and a miss there from Tejada, 1-1.
Fun facts are fun. You know, that's why they exist, to share them and put the idea into the universe.
Yeah, I'm trying to speak it into existence. The funnest of facts, talking about walk-off Ws.
Manifestation, I believe.
Exactly. Tejada was a walk-off hero in one of the games last year. In his first week at High A, hit a walk-off two-run home run to break a 1-1 tie in the bottom of the ninth inning on a ball that was absolutely crushed over the visiting clubhouse roof in left field. Wouldn't mind him doing that to tie it. Birds would love to have this leadoff man on and get the winning run to the plate. 1-2, that's high.
And the Iron Birds only need one of Tejada, Mordaunt, or Vasquez to reach to send it back to the top of the lineup and Vance Honeycutt.
Fly ball center field, a couple steps over for Myers, and he's there to make the catch. I mean, I think that has to be the goal. Get a guy on, bring Vance Honeycutt up as the winning run. You know, I think you feel pretty good about that situation.
Given how many times he's been up to the plate so far tonight, getting more in rhythm, coming off that performance yesterday, he's in a little bit of a groove now.
Four up, four down for Snellsire. Eight in a row set down by the Hot Rods bullpen tonight. So it's not the time for the bats to go cold.
While we're sharing fun facts, Hayden Snellsire, you mentioned going to Randolph-Macon College, yep, a D3 program. He was an All-American there, but he's the program's all-time strikeout leader with 237.
It's pretty legit. It doesn't matter where you go. If you're the all-time leader in some category, that's huge. 1-1, inside-out swing to right. Diaz is over towards the line, and he makes the catch. Mordaunt is retired. Birds with one out left to play with. Snellsire in position for the win right now because he entered with the game tied in the eighth. The Hot Rods just took the lead. Both teams got a run in the second. The Hot Rods got a leadoff home run from Ryan Spikes off the batter's eye in dead center to lead off the ninth. Pitch misses. Oh, it caught the outside corner to Vasquez, 0-1.
Jalen Vasquez over 3 tonight with 2 strikeouts, struck out in each of his first 2 at-bats. Needs to put something in play here, I would think.
0-1. Sends it back behind home plate. 0-2. Birds down to their final strike. Each team with 6 hits in the game. But the Birds trailing by 1. Hot Rods looking for 4 scoreless innings from their bullpen to finish this thing off. 0-2 to Vasquez, high and away. Any way, anyhow, that's what Vasquez is looking to do. Get on base, bring the winning run to the dish. 1-2, check swing, grounder, back to Snellsire, throws to first, and that'll do it. Back-to-back wins for the Hot Rods to open this 6-game series. They win it 2-1 on a Wednesday night here in Aberdeen. Birds go down 1-2-3 in each of their final 3 innings at the plate. The Hot Rods bullpen set down 10 in a row to end it, and they get the W to jump over 500. Well, Sam, really well-played game on both sides. Pitching and defense led the way. Tough to hit when that combination of good pitching and good defense is out there. But overall, both teams played well, and the Hot Rods just one run better.
Yeah, Gary Gilhill, somebody who I was intrigued to see today, being such a prominent prospect in the Tampa Bay Rays system, really setting the tone, getting a lot of ground balls early, spreading the ball around the infield, and then switching to more of strikeout stuff as the game went along. That really set the tone, like we were saying, for Bowling Green. And then Hayden Snellsire coming in and absolutely shutting the door. That was an incredibly efficient ninth inning, leaving no doubt once Bowling Green got the lead again. But again, credit to Aberdeen. You're coming off yesterday. You give up 16 runs. Only give up two today. This time it's the bats that go quiet. It's been an interesting start to this series. I'm sure it's been interesting you to watch this and see it go between the two extremes. But Bowling Green comes away with wins both ways.
Yeah, and again, to give up 16 runs yesterday, and five of them off a position player, but 11 through 8 innings, just a tough day overall for the Birds pitching staff. The guys that pitched today, Weatherly, Beck, Rojas, Mendez, combined to allow just two runs in 9 innings. Really impressive. There's always positives to take away from a game like this. And like I just recapped in the bottom of the ninth, both teams got a run in the second. The Birds tied the game at 1 on Anudis Mordaunt's sacrifice bunt. It was a safety squeeze. That's how the Birds netted the run. And then the go-ahead leadoff home run from Ryan Spikes in the ninth was the difference. That's it offensively. The two teams combined for just 13 hits in the game. The Birds out hit the Hot Rods, but they lose by 1. That's a tough one. Sam, I'll go through the final totals in this one, then we'll kind of wrap this thing up and talk about kind of what's going on next for you. Well, with the win, the Hot Rods improved to 12-11 on the season. The Ironbirds dropped to 9-14. 2 runs on 6 hits, 2 errors for Bowling Green, 1 run on 6 hits, and no errors for the Ironbirds. The win goes to Hayden Snellsire. He is 1-0. The loss to Juan Rojas. He drops to 0-3. No save game was played in 2 hours and 34 minutes in front of 943 fans here at Ripken Stadium. Well, Sam, I really enjoyed having you on the broadcast tonight. We connected in Arizona during the Fall League a few months ago. I'm glad you made the trip down from Brooklyn to join me on the air. You got a couple of good interviews earlier in the day. You made a day out of it. Overall, how was the experience hopping on air with me?
It was so much fun to be here. I mean, any night is a good night when you get to talk about minor league baseball. You know, it still feels like this is the last night of April, right? It still feels like it's a new season. I still remember the cold months of the winter, so it's nice to get out here and watch some real baseball where games count. Get to see some top tools on display, whether it's Gary Gilhill's arsenal or Vance Honeycutt's throwing strength. I mean, high A baseball, it's 3 steps away from the majors, but you can still see at this level major league tools come onto display, and you can project these guys forward. And maybe someday, you know, this is going to be an AL East matchup, right? Like, these are Tampa Bay Rays prospects versus Baltimore Orioles prospects in a few years, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. We'll see some of these guys in Camden Yards and down in the Tampa Bay area.
Yeah, one of the coolest parts about it, and I know you told me before we went on air tonight that when you're on a broadcast, it's normally a big event, spring breakout game, some type of all-star event, just a lot going on, and it's more so literally an event versus a game. But here you had a chance to just hop on and do color for a game, so that's definitely a change of pace.
Yeah, definitely, and I enjoy the heck out of this. I mean, it's just talking baseball, like I was saying, that's always going to be a good night, and just reacting to what's happening there instead of trying to bring guests into the booth. And
Right. Thanks
for bringing me.
Yeah.
I know, like, I'm coming into your space here. I totally understand that. So thanks so much for being welcoming and allowing me to share a little bit of my expertise, and you know, hopefully we can do this again down the line.
Yeah, man, it was great to have you. And I got to ask, I want you to tell the people still listening at home, what's next for you with MLB.com and MLB Pipeline? You've got the podcast, you're doing the write-ups, you're writing feature stories and all that. What's next?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the season, right? Like, the season continues to go on. We're going to be doing some market corrections for MLB Pipeline. Guys who started the year on the opening day roster for the major leagues, guys like Christian Campbell or Cam Smith, will be graduating on May 11th. So we're going to do a bit of a refresh of the top 100 here in a couple weeks. Keep a lookout for that. And then we're constantly updating the top 30s as guys graduate off. So, like, already in the back of my head, I'm thinking about Jackson Jobe graduating next week, and I got to put a new Tigers guy on the top 30 for that. So we're constantly doing that. We're writing about prospects from all 30 organizations with what we call One Fets. We had one come out today about the hottest hitters for each organization. And then the Minor League Baseball podcast will come out on Friday, the show before the show, featuring an interview from tonight with Vance Honeycutt.
Love it. Getting some interviews with guys here in the Dean. Vance is a great guy to talk to. Really looking forward to hearing that interview. And Sam, how can everybody follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm mostly posting on Blue Sky these days at Sam Dykstra, MILB. You can find my stuff there. I still do a little bit on Twitter/X at Sam Dykstra, MILB, same thing there. But again, easiest way to follow me is on Blue Sky, and just check out MLB.com/pipeline. All of our stuff funnels through there. MLB.com, same stuff. Show before the show, subscribe to us so you get those pods as they come out every Friday. You'll hear about my travels from tonight and everywhere else that I go across the minor leagues.
It's always great to keep the baseball connections going. When you work in baseball, it's all about the connections. So, Sam, it was great connecting with you in the fall. It was great connecting with you here. You had me on your podcast over the off season. I had to return the favor, get you on a broadcast here in Aberdeen. So it was great having you on the air, and thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
For my outstanding production crew here in Aberdeen and my guest color commentator, Sam Dykstra, my name is Michael Marcantonini. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Back on air tomorrow, 6:40 for the air show. And 7:05, first pitch, game three of the six-game series coming to you tomorrow night. Birds drop this one 2-1. They'll look to get back in the win column tomorrow night. I will talk to you then on the Ironbirds Broadcast Network.